service from experienced pros? Come to Wilson's Tire and Service. Now located in Santa Cruz at 1807 Soquel Avenue across from Walgreens, in Soquel Village at Old San Jose Road and Soquel Drive, and now in Aptos Village across the entrance to Nicene Mark State Park. Questions? Call 476-0370. That's 476-0370. Say hello to Juan and get the Wilson's Tire and Service full service.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
It's Canada.
CBS News, I'm Bill Fitka. Deepening conflict in the Mideast, even as Israeli warplanes hit targets in areas that had been spared. A Hezbollah rocket barrage has killed as many as 8 people in Israel. One missile penetrating farther than ever before near a town 50 miles south of the Lebanese border, raising the prospect that Tel Aviv might be next. Correspondent Robert Berger.
Analysts say that hitting Tel Aviv would be like Hezbollah's last statement as this war draws to a close. There's talk of a ceasefire resolution at the UN. Hezbollah wants to make a point, and hitting Tel Aviv would make a very strong one. Israel says if that happens, there would be severe retaliation.
Arab television says 5 Israeli soldiers have been killed in fierce fighting, dozens of Lebanese killed. Israel, for the first time, bombed northern Beirut, destroying bridges leading to the capital. That creates a major problem, severing one of the last lifelines for humanitarian relief. In Baghdad, tens of thousands flooding the streets, demonstrating support for Hezbollah. The crowd chanting death to Israel, death to America. President Bush spoke by phone today with U.N. Secretary General Kofi Annan about a ceasefire. It'll be an issue when Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice arrives in Crawford, where Mr. Bush is on vacation. Right now on Radio Marti, the Cuban people are hearing a message from Secretary Rice.
Throughout this time of change, all of you must know that you have no greater friend than the United States of America.
Rice addressing the island nation after Fidel Castro was stricken by illness Monday. He still has not been seen nor spoken. In and around Phoenix, people have been living in the grip of fear for more than a year because of a string of serial killings. Today, there was relief.
Members of the task force arrested Dale S. Hauser and Samuel John Dietman for numerous counts of murder and aggravated assault. They are the serial shooters that this task force has been hunting.
Police Chief Jack Harris, the men are considered suspects in the serial shooter case, blamed for killing 6 people. Police are still searching for a second attacker, known as the Baseline Killer, believed responsible for killing 8. Getting around Mexico City these days means navigating a political obstacle course. Supporters of the leftist candidate for president have virtually paralyzed the capital. Adrian Bard reports.
Downtown Mexico City is a sea of colored tents and porta-potties as supporters of leftist candidate Andrés Manuel López Obrador enter their 5th day camping out. People trying to get to work in high-rise office buildings can't. Buses are forced to take detours. Protesters even blocked the modern glass dome stock exchange, said one local newscaster.
Por este estrangulamiento de la Ciudad de México,
the city is being strangled. Adrian Bart, CBS News, Mexico City.
On Wall Street, blue chips down for the day, 2.25 points, up 20 for the week. The NASDAQ down 7.25 for the day, down 9 for the week. This is CBS News.
Computer security threats such as spam, spyware, viruses, phishing attacks, and pop-up ads invade your business every day through email, web browsing, and instant messaging.
And the right way to stop them is
with Barracuda Networks, spam, spyware, and IM firewalls. Call 888-ANTI-SPAM now and ask for your free trial. Barracuda Networks firewalls are affordable and easy to use. That's why over 30,000 companies and leading universities are Barracuda Networks customers. Call 888-ANTI-SPAM. 888-ANTI-SPAM. Or go online to BarracudaNetworks.com.
Because financial solutions have no borders or boundaries, because one market affects another market, UBS operates in only 2 locations, everywhere and right next to you. Powerful global resources leveraged every day to the most important issues. Yours. UBS, leader in wealth management, global asset management, and investment banking, and committed to a relationship we call you and us. Member SIPC.
The heat in retreat. There's a break in the triple digits that have been smothering the east and midwest. Temperatures gradually subsiding, but it may take a day or two for the more lenient weather to find its way south. It is still smoldering in Washington and in Philadelphia. Fans of Star Trek will be beaming. The first official auction of memorabilia directly from the set of Star Trek is coming up for auction in October. Christie's telling the Times of London that never has a collection of this scope come to the market, and it never will again. Paramount is opening the vault, selling uniforms worn by Kirk, Scotty Bones, Spock, and Picard. Even the mini dress worn by Uhura in the original series. More than 1,000 articles, from Vulcaneers to the chair from which James T. Kirk gave orders in the film Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home.
There's my chair.
Get off my bridge. Scotty, ahead. Warp factor one.
Bill Vitka, CBS News.
You've reached Pearson Incorporated. For Matt Pearson sales, press 1. For Matt Pearson accounting, press 1. For Matt Pearson human resources, press 1.
At Aflac, we know things are different in small companies. Introducing Aflac for Small Business. With Aflac SB, your small business can have the same Aflac products and service the big guys get, at no direct cost to you.
For Matt Pearce, in a state of exhaustion, press 1.
To learn more, call 800-99-AFLAC or visit AflacSB.com. American Family Life Insurance Company in Columbus. Aflac.
CompUSA email bag.
Kim emails, Dear CompUSA, do you guys offer scholarships? Even better, Kim, now through Saturday, we're giving away $10,000 every day. And that's in addition to hundreds of awesome deals, like a 1 gig flash drive or SD camera memory card for under $20, our lowest price ever. At CompUSA's back to school sale, we got it, we get it. No purchase necessary, void or prohibited, store visit required. Offer after savings and rebates, see store for details.
Greetings, friends, and welcome to another edition of the Peter B. Collins Show. They named it after me, your humble host. We have 3 hours. It's never enough. What do we make do? Lots to talk about on the program today. In just a moment, it's the return of Scott Dick. He retired from the Army as a major. He serves as the Peter B. Collins Show unpaid consultant on military and veterans affairs. He's fresh back from a month's vacation in Europe, and there's a lot to talk about. Coming up next hour, John Nichols returns to our program. He writes for The Nation magazine. He's also a supporter of reducing corporate media control in this country. We call it media reform. He's going to be with us next hour. We're going to talk about the happy news out of Connecticut, where Ned Lamont is trending toward victory over Joe Lieberman in Tuesday's Senate primary. And we're also going to talk about activities at the FCC. They're trying again to give corporate owners, particularly the TV lords, more control over more media. And we're going to try to stop it. Also on today's program, rescheduled from last week, Dr. Anne Marie Kimball. She's an epidemiologist from the University of Washington in Washington State. And she's going to give us some fresh information on the risks of avian flu, the so-called bird flu. And we're going to talk about why the United States Department of Agriculture has decided to stop testing the herd in this nation for mad cow disease, or BSE. That's all ahead. Plus, in our 5 o'clock hour, Brad Friedman remains on the road, and it takes two or three people to fill in for him. We expect to talk with John Brakey, who is an elections official in Arizona. They're trying to make a decision about electronic machines or not. We'll get an update on District 50 from Emily Levy of the California 50 Action Group, and a review of election issues in the news this week from John Gideon. That's all ahead here on the Peter B. Collins Show. You're welcome to join the conversation. And we have a new toll-free number for you. It's 1-888-5-PETER-B. Maybe you got that in your speed dial already. It's 888-573-8372 or 888-5-PETER-B. You can always email me, Peter, at peterbcollins.com. The website is under construction, and in the next week or so, we should debut the newest facelift there at peterbcollins.com. Scott Dick, great to talk to you again. How was your month-long vacation in Europe?
It was great. It was hot, Peter.
Yeah, well, we had that here, too.
And it was, we were in Germany, Switzerland, and Italy, and it was very interesting.
Yeah. And we know that you wear two hats on the radio, and tomorrow you'll be back live on the Tasty Planet Show on KRXA 540 in Monterey. I imagine you've got a lot of stories to tell from your trip to Europe.
I do indeed. Everything from camping on a budget to some fine dining and some wine probes, they call them in Germany. They don't call them wine tastings. They call them wine probes.
Oh, really?
So we'll be talking food, wine, and travel.
Great. And that's from 1 to 3 tomorrow on KRXA 540. If you're listening on another station, you can log on to hear it on the web at KRXA540.com. Well, Scott, we talked earlier in the day today, and you've been gone for a month, and you asked me a question that I had no answer to. And the question is, where's General Casey?
I was very surprised at yesterday's hearing, Peter, that it was Abizaid, and because the last time I looked, Abizaid was junior to Casey, and it was Peter Pace and Rumsfeld. So where's General Casey? Then I did a Google search, and I haven't seen hide nor hair of him in the press in the last couple of weeks. Actually, I didn't see anything at all from July.
And the last
thing about his disappearance?
Well, the last time I recall hearing from him is he was on the Sunday talk shows the week after the contentious Senate debate over cutting and running from Iraq. And, of course, the Republican senators held firm and said, we will not even think about cut and run. And then 3 days later, he pops up on the Sunday shows and says, yeah, we're considering substantial troop withdrawals and reductions in Iraq for later this year. And now, of course, because of the situation on the ground, the visit last week of Prime Minister Maliki, and the announcement that we are going to concentrate more U.S. forces in Baghdad because of the deteriorating situation there, it became very clear at yesterday's hearing that nobody's thinking about any troops, net troops coming home this year at all anymore.
Well, I wonder if he didn't come to the hearings because he was going to spend more time with his family.
That's what somebody who leaves the Bush administration would do. But let's open up the phone lines here. You know, we've got a lot of people who follow the news. We have people who are in uniform in the Monterey area. And so if you have a line on General Casey and you've heard of a sighting since those Sunday morning talk shows about 5 weeks back, you're invited to call at 888-5-PETER-B and let us know the latest on General Casey. Now, the hearings yesterday were remarkable, Scott. Rumsfeld had first declined to appear because he was just too busy. And then I believe it was John Warner put pressure on him, and he did clear his schedule in order to appear yesterday. And he got a blistering treatment from one Hillary Rodham Clinton, the senator from New York. It appears that she's gotten the message that's being delivered to Joe Lieberman that Democrats aren't going to support senators who are fully behind the administration on both the march to war and the failed occupation.
Well, those two senators, I don't know what else it's going to take to energize them to see that Rumsfeld's whole idea and method of operation is broken and he needs to go. I don't know what else it's going to take.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been really slow coming to the table and saying, you know what, we're not satisfied with his performance. And by them remaining silent, they're just saying, well, he's doing a great job. They might as well say that.
Well, of course, they know they're not the decider.
Yeah. Who is the decider, actually, Peter B?
Well, he claims there's only one, Dick Cheney. So it was an interesting performance. I watched part of it on network television, part of it on PBS, and then I actually managed to capture part of the replay on C-SPAN last night as well. And the real moment was when General Pace was asked the Civil War question.
Mm-hmm.
And he and Abizaid had these carefully rehearsed, carefully phrased answers that were not in a civil war yet, but gosh, you know, we could settle into that, simmer into that at any moment now. So they're starting to acknowledge what you and I have been very clear about for months now, which is that it's not just sectarian violence. We have a civil war on our hands in Iraq. And the follow-up question to General Pace was, did you anticipate this a year ago? I think it was asked by Carl Levin of Michigan. And he paused, and it was a deer-in-the-headlights moment. And you could see his mind working as he said nothing for about 3 or 4 seconds. And he didn't look at Rumsfeld, but I'm sure he wanted to before he answered. And then he said, no, sir. Now, I find that really hard to believe, that these experienced military men who have been on the ground there and been in touch with the situation could say that a year ago they had no inkling that we were descending into this incredible civil war in Iraq. Yet it was an interesting answer because it certainly was not the preferred answer from Rumsfeld's point of view.
Well, Peter, that's the incredible duh factor. Duh. I mean, everybody else from probably the colonels, lieutenant colonels on down, have been looking at the intelligence. And speaking of intelligence, do we not have the best financed, most expensive intelligence network on the planet?
Yeah.
And I'm going with this, you'll see in a second. Were we not completely and abjectly surprised by Castro's leaving power? And didn't President Bush said, I'm completely surprised by that?
Yeah.
How far is that little tiny island country off our coast?
90 miles.
Don't we monitor and watch them like a hawk since they're a terror part of the terrorist network, the axis of evil, blah, blah?
Well, and we have all the bad guys parked on the tip of the island at Guantanamo Bay. So it's not as if we have no contact with the island of Cuba.
So if we're going to connect some of those dots, we could connect them and point in the direction of General Pace and General Abizaid both going, duh. We couldn't have forecast it, even though the death counts are rising. I think a week before we left, we went over those death tolls for Iraqis. They just kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And the trend line was not down or even flat. It was up.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and now the tabulation is in. Over 1,000 civilians were killed in Iraq during the month of July. And I think another, 2,000 or 3,000 seriously injured.
And whole neighborhoods are being completely eradicated. But there was an interesting article in McClatchy newspapers from their correspondent in Iraq, and it's everybody knows they're in the middle of a civil war, except those two generals and Rumsfeld and the president.
Yeah. All right, we'll pick up there as we continue in just a moment. Scott Dick is with us this hour. We're talking military and veterans issues. You're welcome to join us. Toll free at 888-5-PETER-B. That's 888-5-PETER-B. 888-573-8372. And as we continue, we're going to get Scott's impressions of how the war in Israel and Lebanon looks from the point of view of a tourist in Europe. And we'll also talk about Tom Friedman's column today calling for a Plan B for Iraq. Hey, Tom, how about Plan Z, huh? You're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show, 17 minutes past the hour. KRXA 540, Progressive Talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
Hello? Hello? What's in the box? Tell me what's in the box.
Rock Rollin' Real Estate. Every Sunday morning at 10, Rock Rollin' Real Estate gives you the best information on first-time homebuyers, 1031 exchanges, investment strategies, exit strategies, and where the next hot real estate markets are. Rock Rollin' Real Estate, where you're buying ahead of the curve. Every Sunday morning at 10.
I am attorney Sean Mills. Sometimes life does not take the direction that you plan. If you find yourself in need of an honest attorney, call me. I can advise you on both criminal and civil matters. Do not settle for an attorney who simply went to college and law school when you can work with an attorney with significant life experience who uses a common sense approach to everyday legal problems. If you think you need an attorney, I will be glad to offer you a no-obligation consultation and evaluation of your legal issue with no sugarcoating. If you think you have a potential legal issue, it is important that you speak to a qualified attorney as soon as possible. Call me at 831-648-7060. That's 831-648-7060. I am Attorney Sean Mills.
Monta Vista Wine and Spirits in Monterey has everything you need, from high-end liquor to the very best in fine wines. It's the real deal. Family-owned for over 40 years, John will give you one-on-one personal attention, just like family. Have a special request? Not a problem. Open every day from 9 to 9. Monta Vista Wine and Spirits is located on Soledad Drive in Monta Vista Village, near the Del Monte Center. Look for Doug Huckleberry, who greets you at the door. Monta Vista Wine and Spirits wants you to please drink responsibly.
Doing business in Santa Cruz County since 1950, Wilson's Tire and Service now has three locations to serve you better wherever you live. All three locations feature full service, friendly, fast, same-day service, or, in the words of hands-on owner Juan Escamilla,
we're fast and fair, and service is job one at Wilson's Tire and Service.
Specializing in tire, brake, and alignment services with state-of-the-art equipment. Looking for friendly, fast, same-day service from experienced pros? Come to Wilson's Tire and Service. Now located in Santa Cruz at 1807 Soquel Avenue across from Walgreens, in Soquel Village at Old San Jose Road and Soquel Drive, and now in Aptos Village across the entrance to Nicene Mark State Park. Questions? Call 476-0370. That's 476-0370. Say hello to Juan and get the Wilson's Tire and Service full service.
You've got the Peter B. Collins Show blaring out of your speakers, feeding your earbuds. I'm glad you're listening.
As I was walking, ribbon up highway, I saw above me an endless skyway. I saw below me a golden valley.
That's an old Pete Seeger or Woody Guthrie song. This land is your land, and I don't imagine that Israelis and Lebanese are singing that to one another these days. We continue our visit with Scott Dick, the contributor to the Peter B. Collins Show on Military and Veterans Affairs. And Scott, before we move on from yesterday's hearing, it was remarkable that Hillary Rodham Clinton, after generally supporting the Bush administration, you know, more or less over the last few years, made her pivot move yesterday. She made a very sharp break. She did a kind of Joe Biden thing. She had a 5.5-minute question loaded with landmines for Rumsfeld, and she delivered that with some real good excerpted sound bites that made it onto radio and television in pretty wide distribution yesterday. And she hammered him, and then as he responded, the first thing he said was, "My goodness." And from there, he tried to respond to her questions, and later in the day, Senator Clinton called for the resignation of Rumsfeld, a first for her, but clearly, you know, not the first to do so. There were six generals who stuck their necks out earlier this year, and many members of the House and Senate have been calling for Rummy's resignation for well over a year now. So for her to climb on board, I think, is a very interesting shift in the perceived political center of the U.S.
For her, I think it was important to do that, but she's about a year late. Now it looks just like a political move to assuage some kind, you know, her lefties that are in the party that have been screaming about her participation with the Republicans in this issue.
Well, and I think she's looking at her neighbor, Joe Lieberman, in Connecticut. We're going to talk about his plight next hour with John Nichols from The Nation. And it does appear he's going to lose on Tuesday if the poll trends hold. So with that said, let's turn now just to whatever you might have picked up while you were in Europe. I find it very interesting to travel there, particularly when there are major events occurring that involve the United States. And in cafes, you can get some sentiments from average people. people by watching TV or reading or even just glancing at the headlines of newspapers. You can often pick up some tone and at least the focus of the coverage. So any comments you want to offer or observations on the developments between Israel and its neighbors as you experienced it in Europe in the last month?
Well, two parts of that. The first thing I want to say, Peter, is that everywhere we went, we had to show our American passports. And not one time in Germany, Switzerland, or Italy did anybody say anything cross to us about being American or our American role in Iraq or anything like that. I was amazed that every time, every day, as you know, you have to register using your passport because they have to register your presence with the police since we're aliens. And nowhere, any place, campground, did anybody say anything. Now, we brought up President Bush one time in a campground, and the people around us just went, "Oh, Bush!" and that's they started flapping their arms and stuff, and then they calmed down when they realized that that wasn't a supportive comment that we were making. We were just sort of feeling them out because they spoke English. Now, that being said, it's also remarkable by the newspaper coverage of the Lebanese incursion is that that often only dominated a section of the front page, and then they went on to other just as important to them news, economic or local or EU, that kind of thing. So it didn't take up all their time. They weren't, as far as I could tell, talking about it. The World Cup was on and the Tour de France was on, and that was just as important.
Yeah. What about the doping stuff in the Tour de France?
Well, we're in Italy, so we didn't catch much. But, you know, the French have just, they would love to have Landis and Armstrong both discredited as winners because, you know, they're not French.
Right, yeah.
So other than that, I just had to remark that nowhere was there any anti-American sentiment that I felt any place from anybody.
Yeah, and even during the Reagan years when I would travel, it was awkward because people in Europe seemed to like Reagan much more than I did. And they'd kind of ease into a conversation about it, and I'd just say, "Well, I'm glad you like him."
Sure.
How nice for you.
Exactly.
So any notation, for example, did you find that the coverage favored Israel, or was there a sentiment that supported Hezbollah as fighting off an oppressive occupier?
From what I could tell, it seemed to be balanced. They would show images of the rockets landing in Israel and the carnage there. And then what we don't see here, they would show the result of the Israeli rocket attacks and missile attacks and artillery attacks and that effect on the Lebanese citizens and the idea that these were pretty much innocent individuals. The targeting of Hezbollah fighters is one thing. The random sort of collateral damage is another. And, of course, there are a lot of Europeans that travel all over the Middle East and a lot of Middle Easterners travel in Europe. And so those, it's hard to separate those communities.
Yeah. Now, what about Secretary Rice? She went to Lebanon and Israel stopped the aerial bombing long enough for her to get in and out of Beirut. And at the time, she was offering a minor, humanitarian aid for the Lebanese and was carrying to Israel the message that we are going to immediately resupply them with laser-guided bombs, bunker busters, and a few other things that they seem to sorely need. And then she really ticked off the gathering in Rome because the U.S. blocked a call for an immediate ceasefire. Did you see any coverage of Rice that gave you any sense of attitudes there?
No, it was more what I saw was just the picture opportunity, the photo ops that they had with them shaking hands and that kind of thing was a brief, for me, not intelligible analysis of what she was doing there. And the commentators are fairly, you know, monotone when they're talking about Angela Merkel, which is the female chancellor of Germany. And
yeah, Bush's back rub partner.
Yeah, so they don't change their tone. They don't suddenly get shrill like our right-wing commentators on, like, Fox News when they start talking about Clinton or Hillary Clinton.
What about the open mic at the G8 summit and Bush's remarks? Did that get any play that you know of?
I don't know. I wasn't in a place every day that we could even see the newspaper or the television. We're camping, and a lot of places don't. As I said, if the TV was on during the day, it was on the tour.
Mm-hmm. Scott, we're going to take a break and return. I want to talk about Tom Friedman's column today calling for a Plan B like Bosnia. You serve served in Bosnia. I want to get your reaction to it. That's coming up next on the Peter B. Collins Show. Join us toll-free, 888-5-PETER-B.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Hi, I'm Patty Ross, Realtor. What pops into your mind when you hear the word real estate? Security? Investment? White picket fences? Did you know that real estate is the single most sought-after asset on the planet? More people have accumulated wealth through real estate than by any other means. So whether you own property and want to cash in your equity, or simply want to take advantage of buying in this changing market, you need a qualified agent who understands market conditions and will listen to your needs. From Santa Cruz to Salinas, from Carmel to Big Sur, call me, Patty Ross, for a free consultation. I'm hardworking, experienced, and I care about you. Hey, forget the rest, get the best. Call me, Patty Ross. My heart's in it.
Contact Patty Ross at Keller Williams Realty in Carmel at 622-6235. That's 622-6235, or visit her website, pattyrosscarmel.com.
Parents, do you need cash for college? This year, more than $100 billion is available for financial aid. Let AboutCollegeFunding.com help you navigate the complicated process to accessing your share of these funds. AboutCollegeFunding.com is now offering free one-hour consultations for parents in need of answers. To schedule your free one-hour consultation with RJ Moyet, call 1-888-337-9775. That's 1-888-337-9775.
Remember, the early bird gets the cash.
There are radio talk shows about sports, politics, money, sex, and religion. Now there's a talk show for parents and everyone else who cares for and about children. It's Childhood Matters, every Sunday from 9 to 10 a.m. here on KRXA 540. I'm the host, Rona Renner, the mother of four, a new grandmother, a nurse, and parent educator. Listen and call in Childhood Matters every Sunday from 9 to 10 here on KRXA 540.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
Would you like to be part of a conversation that might not only inspire your golf game, but have you thinking differently about sports, about learning, and about performance? Join golf pro and best-selling author Fred Shoemaker on KRXA 540 Saturday mornings at 8 a.m. for Extraordinary Golf, some uncommon conversations about golf, and maybe even a little beyond golf. Extraordinary Golf, Saturday mornings on KRXA 540 at 8 a.m.
Tom Hartman.
Resolution 1440 explicitly said that no force could be brought to bear on Iraq until either Hans Blix or Muhammad al-Baradei, one of the two weapons inspectors, had indicated that there were either weapons of mass destruction or evidence of weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. And only then could force be used against Iraq. And that never happened.
It's the Tom Hartman program.
So here's George Bush saying that we took out Saddam Hussein because he wouldn't let in the weapons inspectors. And it was Bush who pulled the weapons inspectors out.
Tom Hartman on KRXA 540.
You've got the Peter B. Collins Show. I'm your humble host, Peter B. Coming up next hour, John Nichols joins us. We're going to talk about the Lamont-Lieberman race in Connecticut. The decision day is Tuesday. And we're also going to talk about media reform. The FCC has another plan to expand the ownership limits for the corporate media, and we've got to do what we can to stop it. We'll be conspiring with John Nichols next hour here on the Peter B. Collins Show. We continue with Scott Dick, our contributor on military and veterans affairs. You're invited to join us if you have a comment on any of the issues we're discussing, or you want to bring something up related to our veterans or our uniformed service members. And the number to call is toll-free, 888-5-PETER-B. That's 888-5-PETER-B. Scott, I wanted to turn next to Thomas Friedman's column in the New York Times today. And I do concede the historical credibility that Tom Friedman has about the Middle East. I think he's lost a lot of it over the last few years, particularly as he has routinely predicted that the next 6 months will determine what happens in Iraq. And he's been saying about that next 6 months for about 3 years now. Mm. Well, he's moving on, and I think he's gotten a dose of reality here. In today's column, he first outlines the comments that we talked about from General Abizaid and General Pace yesterday. And then he says, but the administration now has to admit what anyone, including myself, who believed in the importance of getting Iraq right, has to admit. Whether for Bush reasons or Arab reasons, it's not happening. And we can't throw more good lives after good lives. Since the Bush team never gave us a plan A for Iraq, it at least owes us a plan B. It's not easy. Here are my first thoughts about a plan B and some of the implications. He says, I think we need to try a last-ditch Bosnia-like peace conference that would bring together all of Iraq's factions and neighbors. Just as Bosnia could be solved only by an international peace force and the Dayton Conference, including Russia, Europe, the U.S., the powers most affected by Bosnia's implosion, the civil war in Iraq can be quelled only by a coalition of those most affected by Iraq's implosion. The U.S., Russia, Europe, Japan, India, China, Turkey, Saudi Arabia, Egypt, Iran, Syria, and Jordan. As in Bosnia, any solution will have to be some form of federalism, a division of oil wealth and policing by an international force where needed. Now, first of all, I commend Tom Friedman for this dose of realism, and, you know, it's about time. On the other hand, I think that his idea for a conference here, while it makes a certain amount of sense, he's got some countries listed there, like Syria, Jordan, Iran, and to a lesser extent, Egypt, who I don't believe would be very helpful to the United States in trying to fashion a peace that does not produce a lingering threat to American interests.
Don't forget Turkey.
Yeah. Well, okay, Turkey's in there, too.
The idea of a Kurdish state.
Well, and Turkey, by the way, in the last few weeks, has been dipping its toe into northern Iraq. There is word of troop movements there, some in, some out. But some sources indicate that the Bush administration has given Turkey a green light to, quote-unquote, clean up its problems with the Kurds.
Well, the Kurds have been claiming that the Turks have been operating across that border now for the entire time.
Yep.
So this wouldn't be anything new, except now it's being officially noted.
Mm-hmm. Now, you served in Bosnia, and you had some pretty high-level contacts there as we moved from the military operations into peacekeeping mode. Tell me your thoughts about Friedman's idea here as applied to Iraq.
Well, the first thing that came to my mind as you were reciting that, Peter, was the idea that what Friedman didn't say and what nobody has had the guts to say in the administration is, I wrote this on my pad, there is no end to this violence. So regardless of what countries come, who did he forget? He forgot the Kurds, the Shia, and the Sunni, who have no, as far as I'm aware of, clear one leader. Bosnia was completely different. They brought in the three leaders of the three warring factions, sat him down, and we had Holbrooke and Clark, and we have no equivalent that I know of that works in the Bush administration that could fill Holbrooke's shoes to pin these guys to the ground. And each one of those leaders of the Serbs, the Bosnian Serbs, the Serbs, and the Croatians, they all had interests in keeping themselves alive and keeping their economic interests viable. In other words, they all wanted to be millionaires, and we facilitated that. And that's the one of the reasons that they became compliant. And we moved into Bosnia, Peter, I want everybody to remember, with their permission after they had agreed to ceasefire.
Mm-hmm.
So he could say, he could compare it to Bosnia all he wants, but they're so different. Find me the three people that lead the factions. Al-Sistani is obviously one of them. Do we want to elevate him above the government of Iraq?
Well, and we're not going to deal with Muqtada al-Sadr.
Exactly. So who's the Sunni leader that can stop everything? The Sunnis will obey. The Shia leader we know is al-Sistani. The Kurd leader, who is that? And then all of the different factions that want to get a piece of the pie. You got the criminal faction, which the current Iraqi administration is completely letting run amok. And how are you going to lasso all those people to agree to any kind of sustainable peace? So I think he wrote some words that on the surface sound good, but, you know, they really just, it seems like it was a useless column.
Now, Scott, you took a swipe at the talent pool of the Bush administration, saying that Richard Holbrooke was a great diplomat during the Bosnia era, and there is no equivalent. Now, you're overlooking Condoleezza Rice, the Soviet expert who's done such a brilliant job just in the last 3 weeks in the Middle East. You're overlooking John Bolton, the guy with that huge mustache who is alienating everyone at the United Nations. There's always Jim Baker, who's ready to hop on a corporate jet if you just send it for him to Houston, and he's got clients all over the Middle East. He'd be happy to serve his interests by trying to broker peace, don't you think? I mean, look at that talent pool.
I'm so underwhelmed. I'm almost falling asleep. I don't know if it's the jet lag or the list of names you just gave me. I'm being sarcastic because they obviously haven't pulled anybody into the mix that can do anything. The few that they had early on in the administration, they're gone.
Well, Dr. Kissinger isn't dead yet.
Well, like I said, the few they had early in the administration are gone. Now, we're forgetting the president of the World Bank, but, you know, he's in trouble with his own staff because he apparently illegally hired all those cronies from the Bush administration to come work with him at the World Bank. So he's.
And I love the way you Germanized the pronunciation of Wolfowitz.
Sorry. No. I did say that, didn't I?
No, that's you haven't mentioned his name yet today, but when you pronounce it, you give it the full Teutonic, and I like that.
Well, he is a Wolfenstein. Sorry, I couldn't help it. Sorry, listeners, that's just an inside joke.
Well, I take your point. I do believe that not only do we have a shortage of talent in terms of diplomats who could try to broker some sort of honest deal out of the mess we've created in Iraq, but we also have no credibility as a broker of any sort, because we had a phony coalition going in that has evaporated by all accounts, and we have been unilateral in most of our approaches at the United Nations, at the EU, at NATO, with the allies who begged us to wait when we just had to march into Baghdad in the spring of 2003. So we've burned a lot of bridges. And that's a poor metaphor, but you get my point.
Sure. And, you know, Peter, six weeks ago, we were talking, I was talking about NATO specifically. I'm glad you brought that up. As you can see, the Taliban are turning up the heat on the NATO troops. We had several Canadians killed. And
there was eight. Eight were killed this week, and they took over on Monday.
And the Brits, several Brits were killed a couple of days before. So, as I predicted, with NATO, they're not rock solid as far as chain of command, because there are 26 individual countries that have volunteers fielding these jobs. It's going to be tough. It's going to be ugly. And that's what I'm predicting, by the way, NATO in Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm.
So the talent pool for trying to broker a peace, what Friedman suggests, I think, is nutty. Holbrooke put on a steel-toed boots and grabbed each one of those guys by the ear and drug them into a room and beat them about the head and shoulders until they came out and said, okay. And he did it with his own style, and he knew that Clinton would back him up, and Clark was there, and Clark was a brilliant negotiator.
Mm-hmm.
So that's I'd like to see him pull those guys out at a retirement, actually. But that would be completely unlike, since Holbrooke's not a pioneer and neither is Clark. They'll never get those jobs. If they didn't raise $100,000 for Bush, they ain't going into anything that's got any kind of political clout.
Yeah. So as you view the situation in Iraq today, Scott, do you see an exit either you know, with honor or without for the United States?
No, that wind, you know, that wind noise that you hear is the sucking sound of Baghdad pulling more troops into what is called a DIP mission, a DIP mission.
And what does DIP stand for?
It stands for Die in Place.
Mm.
And they're going to bring another brigade. First of all, they're bringing another brigade in. Second of all, they told a brigade in the midst of its homecoming.
Right, strikers.
That they were not going. They're going to be extended not 1 month, not 2 months, but 4 months, which is a third of a second tour back-to-back. And they're putting them in Baghdad. And how are these 3,400 troops going to, what difference are they going to make? They're going to have the same impact in Baghdad that our National Guard are having on the border, as far as I'm concerned. All they're going to do is going to go out there and be subject to more attacks, and they're completely, their targets, their pegboards, what am I looking for, this, you know, this game you play with the darts? They're dartboards.
Yeah.
And they can walk around all they want. They're just bullseyes. And adding 3,400 more, I don't see is going to make a bit of difference.
Well, and we have a situation now where the, whatever you want to call the fighters in Iraq, I don't really consider these people insurgents, but there are groups who have uniforms and SUVs, and they're paramilitary is the best way I can describe them. And they're going around snatching people of the other sect. And in the most recent case, it was Shias to Sunnis, but there was a Sunni mass grab of Shia in the last week as well. There were, they found a busload of them, they took them out in the woods, and they just executed them. And so it is very difficult to tell who has credible authority, even if they're in uniform. And the Americans continue to be in a deficit mode of trying to deal with language and culture and other barriers because we simply don't know who is friend or foe at any given moment. And to concentrate more troops in the shooting gallery of Baghdad is going to lead to more American casualties, most likely, and it's hard to imagine that it's going to curb the violence of Iraqi on Iraqi.
I don't know how they got SUVs in there. That's what's stumping me. There's some high finance going on, Peter. And you know that billion that the Ministry of Defense, the Iraqi Ministry of Defense, leaked someplace.
Right.
So these well-funded, well-armed, well-equipped, well-uniformed militias are part of somebody's plan.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody who's got a big, fat checkbook.
Yeah.
And it just can't be the local. Well, it could be. I don't know that much about Iraqi society. I am still want to point out to people that one of my favorite photographs of Imam in Baghdad, and what was remarkable about his furniture, he had a 42-inch flat-screen plasma TV on the desk beside him.
Yeah.
So these, there's some big money there. It is financing a very organized, very well organized, trained. We're probably training those guys.
Some of them, yeah.
Or training the trainers.
We got to take a break. We'll return with Scott Dick, and we got a couple of callers. We'll go to the phones next at our new toll-free line number. I got to remember it. It's 888-5-PETER-B. That's 888-5-PETER-B. 888-573-8372. We'll continue with Scott Dick right after this on the Peter B. Collins Show.
You're listening to KRXA 540.
I'm Chuck Mackley, owner of Executive Financial Services. I can get you up to 12% interest on your investment on first and second trust deeds secured by real property. Don't settle for 3 to 5% on your money. Call me today at 443-7277. Your investment will be protected by the equity in the property and title insurance. Put your hard-earned money to work. Call Executive Financial Services at 443-7277 and ask for Chuck Mackley.
I am attorney Sean Mills. Sometimes life does not take the direction that you plan. If you find yourself in need of an honest attorney, call me. I can advise you on both criminal and civil matters. Do not settle for an attorney who simply went to college and law school when you can work with an attorney with significant life experience who uses a common sense approach to everyday legal problems. If you think you need an attorney, I will be glad to offer you a no-obligation consultation and evaluation of your legal issue. with no sugarcoating. If you think you have a potential legal issue, it is important that you speak to a qualified attorney as soon as possible. Call me at 831-648-7060. That's 831-648-7060. I am Attorney Sean Mills.
Children's books, educational toys, and games your entire family will enjoy are always in season at locally owned and operated Thinker Toys. Hi, this is Nurse Rona of Childhood Matters. We know that our children learn by playing, and the caring staff at Thinker Toys will help you choose the ideal gift for toddlers through teens. Stop by our beautiful Carmel store at 7th and San Carlos and the just renovated Thinker Toys at Del Monte Center in Monterey. Thinker Toys is open daily.
I'm here to tell you about Central Avenue Bakery in beautiful Pacific Grove. Every day we feature the finest and freshest healthy whole grain foods with vegan and wheat-free options for those so inclined. We mill our own organic, fresh whole grain flour daily. Galina, our Russian pastry chef, turns those fresh whole grains into delicious masterpieces. Muffins, cakes, cookies, pies, banana chocolate bars, macaroons. She adds new items all the time. We also have a variety of whole grain breads, fresh homemade sandwiches, soups, and veggie entrees made with mostly organic ingredients. Our all-you-can-eat Sunday buffet with the top vegetarian entrees, soups, salads, and desserts is locally famous. We also welcome groups, parties, and catering orders. Stop in for a latte, snack, or full meal. You'll come back again and again. Come visit us at 173 Central Avenue at the corner of Dewey in the Old Granary Building, just two blocks from the aquarium. Or give us a call at 373-2000. That's 373-2000. Central Avenue Bakery, where healthy and delicious go hand in hand.
Peter B. Collins Show rolls on for a Friday. Wherever you are, however you're listening, I'm delighted you're with us. We're talking with Scott Dick, our contributor on military and veterans affairs. And if you'd like to join the conversation, there's a line open for you at 888-5-PETER-B. That's toll-free, 888-5-PETER-B. And we're joined now by Steve in Salinas. Hello, Steve. You're on the Peter B. Show with our good friend Scott Dick.
Good afternoon. I've got a couple of thoughts on the Freedman's plan.
Mm-hmm.
And number one, Bush would never do, but I think if the United States were to go to the UN and apologize profusely for having screwed up, they might be willing to help us and send in peacekeepers so we get our folks out of there.
Well, I don't disagree that the U.S. could accomplish a lot by acknowledging our errors. One of the things I think that galls Americans and other people around the world alike is that we say mistakes were made, but we always talk about it in the passive voice.
Yeah,
and when you heard Rumsfeld's answer yesterday, he interviewed himself. Have we made mistakes? Yes. Has the enemy gotten smarter and do they have a brain? Yes. At a certain point, if somebody explicitly said, here's a list of all the blunders we've made, and here's what we're doing to try to correct those errors.
And we're sorry for it.
It would be a place to start. You're right, Steve.
Okay, and also about Turkey and Kurdistan. Maybe Turkey could be placated somehow or other, like immediate entry into the European Union, or maybe there's another way that we could bribe them to accept the Kurdistan.
We already let them in.
Are they already in?
Yeah.
That's good, I guess.
Wait a minute, Scott, am I correct? I think Turkey was allowed into the EU earlier this year. That was...
Then that's a bombshell that I'm
not
aware of.
All right, I'm being told everybody says no, so I'm going to retract that.
I was under the impression they weren't.
Okay.
And
Turkey.
Maybe that could be some sort of a carrot for them, and maybe put a few more carrots, and they would accept that.
Mm-hmm.
Except that dagger that gets turned away from Iraq gets turned to the heart of Germany when you take in Turkey as part of the EU. It's a very complicated, complex situation with
mm-hmm.
Turks, three generations of Turks, who speak German, who've never been in Turkey, and they're not German citizens, and they never will become German citizens. And for the EU to become for Turkey to become part of the EU, then that would mess their whole system up.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you can be a Russian Schwab, somebody who four generations, five generations ago, maybe even six, was sent to Russia asked to come by Catherine the Great, moved to Siberia by Stalin, and they become they have rights to go to Germany almost overnight.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're a third generation Turk living in Germany, forget about it.
Yeah.
So the idea of Turkey coming to the EU, everybody in Central Europe is real scared by that.
And, Steve, it's interesting because we offered Turkey significant blandishments prior to our invasion of Iraq. I think $5 billion and, a free shopping spree at the Pentagon. And they turned us down. Certainly they may have other issues and a renewed interest in certain types of negotiations or carrots that we could offer them. But it is a complicated picture. And if you appease Turkey, there are geopolitical ramifications. And Scott mentioned Germany, just one of them.
Well, it could be something else. I don't know. Just a place to start and to stop so much killing.
Yeah. Steve, thanks for the call. Thanks for the letter you sent, too. I enjoyed the way you respond to entreaties from the Democratic National Committee these days.
Thanks. I sent him another one yesterday. I'm going broke here.
He sends checks for 50 cents. Ben and Salinas, you're next here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Go ahead, sir.
Good afternoon, sir. Yes, to answer my fellow person from Salinas there, answer his question.
Yeah.
Mr. Bush ain't going to apologize to nobody for nothing. He'd rather see people die and die and die and be homeless and starving than to apologize. He thinks he's a king. He doesn't think he can do any wrong. The focus I wanted to draw today, since we're talking veterans and veterans affairs, is we got people in the troops, beautiful young men and women out there. They're making a total of $2,000 to about $2,500 a month and paying taxes out of that money. People, Republican Christians, listen to me. They're paying taxes out of that right alongside Blackwater mercenaries getting $200,000 tax-free with the ability, with the permission to kill and torture anybody they want. Now, whose Christian army is that? And how does the troops fight side by side? You have our young people who being sent over there by this cowardly deserter, this fascist Nazi from Cowchip, Texas. All these Republican Bible thumpers are, we support the group. America, America, America. What about those young people dying, being blown to bits, and when they come back here, they got to fight for their can of beans, their medicines, they're coming up homeless. If they still have two arms and two legs, and we're waving the flag and crying alligator tears for these mercenaries that are the mercenaries, that $200,000 they get, is that taxpayer dollars?
Oh, sure.
Yeah, Ben, just let me correct one thing. I think our troops that are deployed, there are several tax-free zones, and it extends from Kuwait, all of Iraq and Afghanistan, and probably some outlying areas as well. Those troops are not paying taxes. They're not paying taxes on their bonuses, the reenlistment bonuses, or on their actual wages. So they're doing okay for the $2,500 a month. They get to keep that, plus they got some, $150 family separation pay, plus some hostile fire pay. It doesn't add up to anything like the $12,000 or $14,000, $16,000 a month that generals make, who also receiving tax free pay and live in the green zone.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you're a general and you fly into, or a colonel, anybody flies into Iraq to attend a meeting on the last day of the month and the first day of the next month, then your money for those 2 months are completely tax free. I'd love to see the VIP visitors list and the dates that all their VIPs come to Iraq and or Kuwait, because I believe that's also a tax-free zone.
Mm-hmm.
Then those troops are the Blackwater private security, and you put those in quotation marks. They are being paid with appropriated, contract taxable income, and I believe that those contractors have to pay taxes on their money.
Mm-hmm.
I know that civilians in Iraq have to pay taxes on their money, and that's, if you're a Department of the Army civilian working in Iraq, it's kind of it's unfair, really, because you're undergoing almost the same thing. You're not on combat patrols, but neither is half the staff in the green zone.
Right.
And they're paying taxes on their income. And that was a problem in Bosnia. A lot of the civilians were grumbling about that. Not that they're not good, patriotic American hard workers. It's just that there was a differential there.
Yeah. Ben, I have time for one more comment.
Okay, here's the comment. We have $9 billion missing. Why isn't the heads of OMB, GAO, and the Treasury Department fired if they don't come up with that money? That I would call justice.
I agree. Thank you, Ben.
Thank you, sir.
All right. Appreciate the call today. And, Scott, just a minute remaining here. You wanted to mention about the shortfall in funding for the U.S. Army in the current budget. It's about $450 billion that passed out of the Senate this week.
Well, $450 million, not billion.
Oh,
No, it's billion.
Is it billion?
Yeah.
Jeez, my mind just bought. I know that the Senate is being called the Masters of Diversion because they've moved $9 billion from the 2007 Defense Appropriations Bill to spend on domestic programs that have nothing to do with national security. And, of course, Ted Stevens is at it again. First he complains because they're doing it, then he diverts $170 million to $150 million to pay for breast cancer research with the Department of Defense, only as a middleman, as nothing is directly involved in the military.
Mm-hmm.
So $9 billion, and it's only, I bet you, it's an election year tactic. They're going to try to say, we used $9 billion, but they're taking it away from the troops.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, stop the presses. This is the only thing disappointing about the Internet, Peter. There's no great sound like there was with teletype and that kind of thing.
10 seconds.
There's a group that's having a run to support our troops, raise money for our wounded.
Miguel Sarmiento, owner and chef of the Mexicali Grill in New Monterey, cordially invites you to visit his restaurant and enjoy quality Mexican food prepared with California seasonings and sauces, all with personalized, attentive service. Miguel has more than 14 years of experience preparing Italian, Hawaiian, Mexican, French, and American dishes in restaurants throughout Monterey County. Looking to savor the best Mexicali cuisine served with great margaritas or fine imported or domestic beers? Visit the Mexicali Grill today, located at 204 Lighthouse Avenue at the corner of Reeside Avenue in New Monterey. The Mexicali Grill is open daily for lunch from 11 to 3 and for dinner from 5 to 9. For takeout orders, call 375-9801. That's 375-9801. Miguel has a message for all Central Coast residents who appreciate delicious, high-quality Mexican food at reasonable prices.
Todos son bienvenidos en el Mexicali Grill. Try us. You'll like us a lot.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
It's not over, but Israel says the direction is clear.
We are winning this war, and we are getting rid, slowly but surely, of this terrible terrorist organization.
Two random killers in Phoenix have been run to ground.
They are the serial shooters that this task force has been hunting.
This is the CBS World News Roundup Late Edition. I'm Harley Carnes. Punctuation marks for life in Lebanon these days as Israel goes after Hezbollah and claims to be making decisive inroads and some mistakes.
I'm Robert Berger in Jerusalem. The Israeli army says warplanes targeted two buildings on Lebanon's border with Syria that it thought were warehouses for Hezbollah weapons. But Lebanese officials say it was a vegetable storehouse and the victims were farm workers. Israel expressed regret, saying it does not deliberately target civilians.
Hezbollah will have a tougher time running replacement rockets in from Syria now.
I'm Vicki Barker in Beirut. Lebanon's last substantial link to the outside world has been severed. Israeli warplanes have destroyed several bridges on the highway linking northern Lebanon to Syria. With a naval blockade in place and the main overland highway to Damascus an early casualty of the conflict, it's going to be harder and harder to move fuel and food within the country. Vicki Barker, CBS News, Beirut.
Hezbollah still has plenty of rockets. 190-odd rained down on Israel today, killing four people. On Israel's eastern front, Gaza, two Palestinians were killed, several wounded in an Israeli strike against Hamas in the southern Gaza. In Iraq today, Muslims gathered to demonstrate.
Inside the Shia mosque in Baghdad, supporters shout for Muqtada al-Sadr. He's an openly militant, anti-American cleric with millions of supporters here. Thousands are rallying today in Baghdad. Pro-Lebanon, pro-Hezbollah, anti-Israel, anti-America.
CBS News correspondent Mark Strassman in Baghdad, where U.S. and Iraqi forces plan to begin taking back the street very soon. Now this message.
Come into your local Goodyear retailer for the Goodyear MVP tire sale. Plus, get up to a $40 cash card with a purchase of four selected Goodyear tires. And ask how you can double your cash card value up to $80 on qualifying purchases. Our lineup is stacked from top to bottom with Goodyear's most valuable products, like the award-winning Assurance and Forterra tires featuring triple tread technology. Hurry, because both the Goodyear MVP tire sale and cash card offers end August 26th. Call 1-800-GOODYEAR for the complete details and the retailer near you. Certain restrictions apply.
CompUSA email bag.
Today, Jack emails, Dear CompUSA, got any deals for a starving student? Yeah, Jack. Now through Saturday, we're giving away $10,000 every day. Plus, we've got hundreds of killer deals, like $280 off a compact laptop with AMD Turion 64 processor. It's under $500 after rebates. So get to CompUSA's back-to-school sale, because we got it, we get it.
No purchase necessary. Void or prohibited. Store visit required. See store for details.
For the most part, folks in Phoenix have just gone about their lives, but sometimes at night, a flash of light in the distance and nerves jump a little. Police were hunting, they thought, a serial shooter.
You have really no way to defend yourself against somebody who's just going to take a shot at you from somewhere off in the distance, so I would be immensely relieved if really they do have this guy.
Turns out, says Police Chief Jack Harris, there were two.
After intense investigative follow-up, information received from the public, members of the task force arrested Dale S. Hauser and Samuel John Dietman for numerous counts of murder and aggravated assault.
Six people dead, 17 wounded over a year's time. These are uncertain times for the Cuban people, with Castro sick and all. Secretary of State Rice just wants them to know we're here for you if you need us.
Throughout this time of change, all of you must know that you have no greater friend than the United States of America.
Rice says all Cubans who desire peaceful democratic change can count on the U.S. El Paso is one waterlogged desert town today.
This is a major disaster for us.
That's Mayor John Cook.
We have rocks and boulders, mud, sand and debris everywhere.
Floods from the monster thunderstorms that have been stomping through the area. And who expects to be flooded out in the desert?
Many of the folks who have whose homes have been destroyed did not have any flood insurance, so it's going to be very critical that FEMA come in and start giving some kind of financial assistance to get people back on their feet.
The good news, a dirt dam on the Mexican side of the Rio Grande is holding. Evacuation order lifted. You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
Hi, I'm David Orrick. 40 million Americans suffer from allergies, 17 million from asthma, 37 million from sinus infections. Here's the thought. Change the air you breathe. An Oreck Professional Air Purifier completely renews the air in an average-sized room every 10 minutes. Try it free for 90 days. Call 1-800-989-4200. That's 1-800-989-4200.
Because financial solutions have no borders or boundaries, because one market affects another market, UBS operates in only two locations. Everywhere and right next to you. Powerful global resources leveraged every day to the most important issues. Yours. UBS. Leader in wealth management, global asset management, and investment banking. And committed to a relationship we call you and us. Member SIPC.
From the left coast, it's time for another hour of the Peter B. Collins Show. We might talk to John Nichols from The Nation. We're going to talk about Ned Lamont and Joe Lieberman in Connecticut. And later this hour, we'll talk about the bird flu and mad cow disease right here with Peter B.
Here we go, starting another war. We got our heads up our asses. You know, we're really bored. And people say we act like clowns. We love natural disasters. Did somebody really drown? We lie whenever we want to. Yeah, you know it's true. And if you don't believe us, turn on the nightly news. Hey, hey, we're the Republicans. And people say we act like clowns. We just steal elections. Run the country into the ground. We're just trying to be greedy. Our names are Bush, Cheney, and DeLay. We just passed a new bill recently. It's for people with no brains.
Oh. Well, there's a dino, a Democrat in name only, Joseph Lieberman of Connecticut, who has served 18 years in the United States Senate and is going to get a big kick in the pants on Tuesday. Unless the polling is way, way off, Challenger Ned Lamont is going to win the Democratic primary in Connecticut on Tuesday and leave Joe Lieberman with some difficult choices. Now, we know Lieberman has announced plans to collect signatures so that he could qualify as an independent, essentially a write-in candidate for the ballot this November. But I really feel that with this latest poll, it's possible that Ned Lamont is going to deliver the coup de grace on Tuesday. And I also am curious, and we can't find John Nichols from The Nation. He was going to join us this half hour to discuss this important race, and he may yet join us, but I'm not sure. So if you'd like to call and comment, I welcome your contributions here. Lines are open for you at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. And I see things really starting to shift. And maybe you were listening yesterday when I talked with Faz Shakir from the Center for American Progress. I've been reluctant to predict a Democratic, victory either in the House or Senate and returning control of one of those houses to Democratic leaders this November. But I'm starting to see the outlines of a potential shift. And to me, the 1-2 in this is Ned Lamont closing in and actually surpassing Joe Lieberman in the polls before the primary, and Hillary Clinton's performance yesterday in front of Donald Rumsfeld. That was a calculated move on her part. That is the pivot point that I have been suggesting she take for well over a year now. And it was a calculated move. I think everything she does is quite calculated. And I'm interested in your reaction. Is it pure politics on your part, and do you therefore just write off Hillary Clinton as a presidential candidate in 08? Or is this enough of a move that could persuade you to support a Hillary candidacy in 08? I'm still very skeptical, but this is one of the crucial points that has prevented me from even considering supporting Hillary Clinton. And I'm not ready to, don't worry, I'm not ready to announce an embrace of the former First Lady. But it makes a difference. And if Hillary's getting it, then I think the Democratic Party in general is getting the message. And I'd also like to hear from you on who you think is most responsible for what appears to be an upset in the making. Many people credit the Daily Kos and other elements of the blogosphere with the groundswell that has built up around Ned Lamont. And I give the bloggers credit, and I give talk radio credit, too. We have identified the Lieberman race and Lieberman's offenses to progressives as the critical race this year to not only teach a lesson to Lieberman, but to set an example for others. And it's working. To wit, Hillary's shift. I believe that she looked at the situation in Connecticut and said, if I don't get out ahead of this issue, she's not in any trouble in New York in her reelection campaign this fall. But I think she's recognizing that if she wants to make the run for the White House in 08, that she has to become a different Hillary Clinton. So I see this as all good news. And I feel like trends are moving in a much more progressive direction. And I have a little item pinned up on my corkboard back here that I just grabbed to give you just a quick sketch of the national map related to Democrats and the U.S. Senate this fall. In Missouri, Claire McCaskill, who's a conservative Democrat, now leads Jim Talent, who is an ultra-conservative Republican, by 3 points. Sherrod Brown is sneaking ahead of Mike DeWine, the incumbent Republican, 44 to 42% in Ohio. In Tennessee, for the Bill Frist seat, Harold Ford is ahead by 1 point. Rhode Island's Lincoln Chafee, the moderate Republican, is now behind his challenger by 5 points. In Pennsylvania, Bob Casey Jr., not my favorite. I really liked a guy named Chuck Panacchio, who challenged Casey in the primary and lost. At any rate, Casey has a double-digit lead over Rick Santorum. And yes, I could handle Casey as an alternative to Santorum. In Montana, Conrad Burns behind John Tester by 7 points. Now, for this many incumbents to be in this kind of trouble this early, it gives us hope. I don't say it's a slam dunk. No, I'll never say that. But I do think there is a prospect for Democrats to regain control of at least one house on Capitol Hill this fall. We go to Salinas now, and Steve's on the line. Hi, Steve. It's Peter B.
Hey, Peter. I watched Hillary on C-SPAN on the hearings.
Right.
And I loved it when she made her statement. And then you should have heard Rumsfeld. The first words out of his mouth were, "Oh, my."
No, it was, "My goodness."
Oh, was it "my goodness"? Okay. But it was so bad, because if you saw the exchange when he responded to every other senator,
right,
for him to go about it in that manner was really, I mean, that was really out of bounds, I thought. And it just, you know, anyway, but I thought she did a very good job, and she finally changed her tune, like you're saying. And it's fun, and I'm not a big supporter of hers, because I want to win so bad, you know, in 08. It's just so important, and I don't know whether America's going to do that or not, you know, elect a woman. And, I mean, that's the honest-to-God truth from where I sit.
Well, I think she has a lot of liabilities, and
yes.
I don't want to go back to Paula Jones and the intern and Whitewater and all those, you know, tactics that were used to smear Clinton's in the 1990s. I fear we'll be back in swift boat dimensions in 08 if she is the nominee. So
yeah, I believe that's right. But if she were just to be, you know, the supporting role party, but, you know, very forceful and coming out and taking a stand like they've got to do, rather than being trying to play Republican, you know, it to be more aggressive and, you know, in a progressive stance, I think that's the way to go. And maybe she could play that role and, you know, slide us into home safe. That's what I'm hoping.
Well, you know, nobody runs for vice president. You run for president and you accept the vice presidency because you came up short. I wouldn't object to Hillary being on the ticket as a VP. I think in that role she would be less of a target and would actually bring people to the Democratic ticket. The problem is you can't engineer that, especially from here, you know, this far out from the election. And so, again, I cannot support Hillary Clinton for a variety of reasons, but I do appreciate the significance of her shift on Iraq, and it really came very clear yesterday for the first time.
Yeah, she did a good job. It's going to be interesting to see how she puts, and I, for lack of a better way to put it, her personal business versus the good of the country. I mean, she's got a lot of clout going for her, and it'll be, you know, very interesting to see what kind of a role she'll assume here, because these are such really desperate times.
Steve, thanks a lot for your call today. I appreciate it. I'd like to hear from more people, and lines are open right now at 888-5-PETER-B. As we continue, I'll mention that it was very interesting for me yesterday to see the way Hillary Clinton did this and afterward called for Rumsfeld's resignation. She's not the first to do so, but it is a very interesting picture developing there, and we'll pick up there as we continue. Join the conversation here. Lines available at 888-5-PETER-B. That's 888-573-8372. I'm Peter B. Collins.
You're listening to the new KRXA 540.
It's Behind the Wheel, the Consumer New Car Review. I'm Peter B. Collins. This week, I've been behind the wheel of the 2006 Suzuki Grand Vitara, a midsize SUV that seats five. With four-wheel drive and a 2.7-liter fuel-injected six-cylinder engine and a five-speed automatic, the Grand Vitara performed very well on a weekend drive to the coast. Good acceleration and passing power, easy to handle, quick to respond,
My only complaint is that the four-wheel drive setup makes the steering a little tight at low speeds and requires a bigger turning radius. Inside, it's roomy and attractive with all the accessories you need, including a 6-CD changer with a subwoofer to annoy other drivers. Suzuki offers generous warranties and a great price. The mileage could be better. By the numbers, the 2006 Suzuki Grand Vitara gets 19 mpg in the city, 23 on the highway, and stickers in California for about $23,000. Behind the wheel, I'm Peter B. Collins.
Hello? Hello? What's in the box? Tell me what's in the box.
Rock, Rollin' Real Estate. Every Sunday morning at 10, Rock Rollin' Real Estate gives you the best information on first-time home buyers, 1031 exchanges, investment strategies, exit strategies, and where the next hot real estate markets are. Rock Rollin' Real Estate, where you're buying ahead of the curve. Every Sunday morning at 10.
The Grove Market in Pacific Grove is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Locally owned and operated for 37 years by the Higuera family, the Grove Market boasts the finest selections of just-picked conventional and organic produce our Central Coast farms have to offer. The Grove Market's full-service meat department specializes in the highest quality, choice, fresh-cut, and prepared meats. Local artisanal bakeries deliver breads and other delectable baked goods hot from the oven every morning. To perfect your gourmet home-cooked meal, choose from the Grove Market's outstanding selection of Monterey wines. The Grove Market features competitive prices, personalized service, and home delivery in PG and New Monterey. You can't go wrong at the Grove Market. So shop Monday through Saturday from 8 to 7 and 9 to 6 on Sundays in downtown Pacific Grove, 242 Forest Avenue, just above Lighthouse. The Grove Market, where the locals shop.
Parents, do you need cash for college? This year, more than $100 billion is available for financial aid. Let AboutCollegeFunding.com help you navigate the complicated process to accessing your share of these funds. AboutCollegeFunding.com is now offering free one-hour consultations for parents in need of answers. To schedule your free one-hour consultation with RJ Moyet, call 1-888-337-9775. That's 1-888-337-9775.
Remember, the early bird gets the cash.
Good afternoon, I'm Larry Olson on KRXA 540. We'll begin with a problem in the Santa Cruz Mountains, South 17 at the summit. It's an accident now clearing on the right shoulder. Two cars involved there. Once again, that South 17 right at the summit. Gilroy, Monterey Road at Rucker Avenue, injury crash, a couple of cars. They're reportedly blocking some lanes as well. That's Monterey Road at Rucker in Gilroy. Watsonville, San Andreas Road at Buena Vista Drive, railroad crossing failure. The crossing arms are in the down position with no train in sight. Expect some delays there. Termites work 24/7, 365. Luckily, Orkin works harder. The Orkin man has been fighting invasions for over 100 years, so protect your home, protect your family. For help, call 1-800-ORKINMAN today. I'm Larry Olson with traffic on KRXA 540.
All stations back online. You're listening to the QuadraCast. This is the Peter B. Collins Show. We're on in Monterey on KRXA 540. We're on in Eureka Arcata on KGOE 1480. In Sacramento, 1240 Talk City, KSAC. And in Phoenix, Arizona, 1480 KPHX. A lot of people listen online, too. You can get the link at peterbcollins.com.
Love is free,
and we had scheduled John Nichols from The Nation to join us during this half hour for his comments on the race between Ned Lamont and Joe Lieberman in Connecticut. He's unavailable, and we'll have to get him for it. So I've got room for your calls if you'd like to comment on that important race. I think it is a bellwether, and I am excited by the polling developments just over the past few days with Lamont polling at 54% and Lieberman dropping to 41%. That's very rare in a primary challenge of this sort. And again, the bloggers are getting some of the credit. I think there has been a groundswell from progressives all over the country who felt that the party is just too conservative.
conservative to Republican, and not enough oppositional to the Republican leadership. And bloggers have played a role. It's interesting. In today's New York Times, buried deep in the business section on page C10, they profile a woman named Jane Hampshire. H-A-M-S-H-E-R. She's a Hollywood movie producer, and she's been blogging, I guess, for a few years. She's been on the scene in Connecticut, and she is one of the founders or co-founders of FireDogLake.com, which I've visited on occasion. It's not one of my regular blog stops. And she is the person who thought she was helping Lieberman by posting some critical information. I'm sorry, she thought she was helping Lamont by posting some critical information showing that Joe Lieberman owns shares in a mutual fund that in turn owns shares in Halliburton. And that was used to embarrass him in return, because it turns out Ned Lamont has some stock in Halliburton. Might have been a surprise to him. He's a pretty wealthy guy. Might not know everything that is in his portfolio. But she compounded the problem by posting a story on the Huffington Post, which included a depiction of Senator Lieberman in blackface. And this produced a very strong revulsion. And it was interesting because they had a Lieberman blogger on Hardball last night. Matthews is on vacation. And they put him on opposite... Gosh, my memory's failing me now. Anyway, the Lieberman blogger was trying to attack it was Al Sharpton. And Al Sharpton was essentially defending Lamont and saying that, you know, this has nothing to do with the race. It was certainly a mistake and poor taste, but it shows how much Joe Lieberman needs to change the subject from the war in Iraq. One other thing that I wanted to discuss with John Nichols today, because he is at the forefront of the media reform movement in this country, and you can read about that at freepress.org, is that the Federal Communications Commission is entertaining proposals now to, once again, water down the rules that limit, to the extent they do, a corporate ownership of multiple media outlets in this country. And 2 years ago when they tried it, there was a huge outcry, grassroots response that included far-left and far-right organizations, all concerned about media ownership concentration. And the FCC is trying again. They're doing it a little more quietly, and this time, in addition to the TV ownership rules, it appears they're ready to relax the radio ownership rules, because Clear Channel doesn't have enough stations at 1,200. Coast to coast. So I want you to pay attention to that. Keep your eyes focused, because with all the other things going on in the world, the FCC could quietly make these changes and people like us might not notice.
My country used to be sweet land of liberty that once was true. Shows what we hear and see on radio and on TV. FCCFU. What makes your ass so tight? Does the religious right rule over you? Those who
this is brilliant. And you can find it for yourself at FCCFU.com. I just found out about this yesterday, and I'm not even sure who's responsible for it. It's time.
we take a stand, shout it through all the land. We can't stand you, and while we fight this fight, we can say with delight that Howard's gone to satellite. FCC.
FCC and you.
Well, I'd like to quote Bono at this very moment and say that what I heard and just played for you is freaking brilliant. But I can't quote Bono. I can't use the word that he used on the Grammys when he won an award and said it was effing brilliant, because the FCC has cracked down, but only, you know, on certain words that people have complained about. And it is so frickin' ridiculous that we can, you know, tiptoe through the verbiage and use certain words. For example, ass and pussy are okay. You can call somebody a pussy, but you can't call him, an effing pussy. And you might say, well, that's really clear to me, but it's all quite subjective. And they've now ratcheted up the fines to up to $350,000 for a single offense. And it's just absurd. So, yes, I say FCCFU.com. Visit that website and you can sing along with the song. I'm Peter B. Collins.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Concerned about the steady increase in home mortgage interest rates? Don't panic or overreact. Now is the time to analyze the many available options and to choose the best possible course. Leverage the equity in your home to reduce or eliminate high interest and non-deductible debt. Victor Munoz, president of Creative Mortgage, invites you for a free consultation in his Salinas offices at 201 John Street. To schedule your free Creative Mortgage consultation, call Victor at 757-0436 right now. That's 757-0436.
ZNS Auto Sales in Monterey, family owned for 30 years, is where partnership works. Whether you're a first-time buyer and need a safe economy car, or looking for a truck or SUV or a classic, they have it all. Call ZNS before you make that final decision. ZNS open every day at 1179 Del Monte Boulevard between the Navy Postgraduate School and Lake El Estero. High-quality used cars at the very best prices. ZNS Auto Sales, where partnership works.
Have you thought about owning more real estate but don't know where to turn? Are you interested in learning how to make good profit buying and selling real estate? Or do you want to learn how to let your tenants pay the mortgage while you enjoy the equity? If you want to learn the ins and outs of real estate investing, listen to The Real Estate Guys, Sunday nights at 5 on KRXA. You can own more real estate. The Real Estate Guys will show you how. Listen Sunday nights at 5 and on the web at realestateguysradio.com.
This is Frank Don. On Sunday evenings at 7 p.m. here on KRXA 540 a.m., join me for Frank Don's Astrology Hour, a live call-in program to discuss astrology, the astrology of the world, and your own personal astrology. Let me answer your questions, and let me teach you how astrology can help you make better life choices. Here on KRXA 540 a.m. from 7 to 8 every Sunday evening, join me for Frank Don's Astrology Hour.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
Children's books, educational toys, and games your entire family will enjoy together are always in season at locally owned and operated Thinker Toys. Hi, this is Nurse Rona of Childhood Matters. Research and common sense show that children learn by playing, and the caring management and staff at ThinkerToys have 37 years of experience helping parents and grandparents choose the ideal gift for toddlers through teens. So whether you're birthday shopping or simply want to show your love, a gift from ThinkerToys is a way to let someone know you care enough to shop for the very best. With an outstanding selection of Thomas the Tank engines and tracks, puzzles, board games, and children's books, all very reasonably priced, you can't go wrong with a gift from ThinkerToys. So stop by the beautiful Carmel store at 7th and San Carlos, or the just renovated Del Monte Center in Monterey. ThinkerToys is open daily.
And the Peter B. Collins Show rolls on. As you know, this program takes very seriously the issues of voter integrity. And Brad Friedman, our go-to guy, is still on the road. So coming up next hour, we're going to talk with John Brakey, an activist in Arizona, and Donna Branch Gilby, who is the county Democratic chair in the Phoenix area in Pima County. And yesterday, they made a decision to embrace electronic voting machines with significant conditions. We'll talk about that coming up about a half hour from now. Joining us this half hour is Dr. Anne Marie Kimball. She has been on the faculty at the University of Washington since 1993. She's an epidemiologist. And I even got that word out. I'm feeling real good about that. She directs the APEC Emerging Infections Network and the Fogarty International Scholars Program in Health Informatics and serves on the International Faculty Council at the University of Washington in Washington State. Dr. Kimball is also the author of a new book called Risky Trade, Infectious Disease in the Era of Global Trade. Anne Marie Kimball, welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Thank you very much. I'm pleased to be here.
Well, it's nice to talk with you, and you know more than I do about a lot of these things, so I've got questions, and hopefully you can provide a few answers. First of all, the focus of your book is on how globalization and the relaxation of borders, the enhancement of travel, has opened the world up to more infectious diseases with each reduction of the barriers that I described. So are airliners one of the front lines now of infectious disease transfer?
Yes, I think almost all of our rapid transit situations, airliners, you know, boats, which is traditional, everything that moves people around the globe and goods around the globe is potentially also moving microbes. But, you know, it's not just the 20th century globalization. It's been happening actually since the 1700s when we first had seagoing vessels. What's different now is the speed with which things are moving. And I think that's made a crucial difference because now you can get on an airplane looking and feeling well and get to your destination, which may be many thousands of miles away, and then get ill 2 or 3 days later from a disease you actually contracted back at home.
Yeah. And likewise, you could make a trip to Hong Kong and be exposed to avian flu or previously SARS. We know that HIV was rapidly transmitted via international travel. Randy Schilt's book, it may have been apocryphal, but traced the origin of AIDS to a flight attendant.
Right, right. Randy Schultz's book is very, very topical, and also in the book, of course, I also describe the trade in blood factors, which was also very important for HIV transmission, especially to Asia.
Mm-hmm. What are the biggest microbial threats that we should be focused on right now?
Well, we've heard an awful lot about avian influenza and the concept that we may be kind of on the verge of a new human pandemic, and I think that's important to pay attention to. But there's a lot of other stuff out there that we also need to think about. I think the biggest challenge we're facing, frankly, is the increasing resistance in a lot of different microbes that we're seeing, tuberculosis, salmonella, cholera. I mean, there's just a number of different microbes which are becoming resistant to the antibiotics we use to treat them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a very important challenge that we actually could get our hands around pretty easily if we chose to.
And when you talk about antibiotics, is it that humans ingest too many and reduce their resistance, or is it throughout the food chain? Because we know that many factory farmed animals are fed rather large doses of antibiotics to keep them from contaminating one another in these very densely populated cages and other other places where these critters are raised before we eat them.
Absolutely, and I think that's why I found the whole topic of looking at how global trade acts interacts with our understanding of emerging infections to be so fascinating. We do here in the United States use a lot of antibiotics in our food animals, both in chickens and to a certain extent as growth promoters in our beef herds. Recently, the European Union has studied that intensely, and they've begun to make significant bans, if you will, on the practice of growth promoters among their food animals. So the next act, usually when that happens, is that you'll start to see trade embargoes against the United States because of residues of antibiotics in our exports of meat and chicken. So it's all an ongoing drama, both in the commercial area of global trade and also in the microbial area of the fact that we are selecting for more and more resistant organisms with our practices.
Dr. Kimball, this may be a Hobson's choice, but should we be more concerned about domestically produced farm animal products or internationally imported items in that same category?
You know, that's an excellent question, which is really hard to answer. And I can't answer that. I would say that there's a very large and growing organic industry, which in fact some of your traditional, meat and beef industry folks are buying into in a large way, so that you'll see, you know, what used to be a standard practice kind of agricultural and food industry company purchasing smaller organic companies or working with them. So it's really getting blurry, but generally there is a move towards getting away from antibiotics and getting away from the risks that we see with mad cow disease, the certified Angus beef sort of approach to markets. So
mm-hmm.
It's getting, you know, I would say domestically you can at least find out the sources of your food a little more efficiently than you can internationally.
Yeah. I want to talk to you about BSE, the mad cow situation, in the next segment, because I'm a little concerned that the USDA has announced that it wants to stop testing the cattle herds in the United States. We're talking with Dr. Anne-Marie Kimball from the University of Washington. Her new book is called Risky Trade, Infectious Disease in the Era of Global Trade. If you have a question, feel free to join us toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-5-PETER-B, or 888-573-8372. So as we look at the risk from the avian flu, which is technically known as the virus H5N1, we've seen reporting from Asia. And from what I understand as a layperson, the critical issue is when the contagion starts to jump from animals to humans. I guess what we've seen is measurable infection animal to animal, and some isolated cases of humans being infected as well. How would you describe the current situation and the extent to which we should be concerned here in the United States about an outbreak of avian flu, perhaps in the next flu season?
Oh, that's an excellent question. And in fact, we have seen human-to-human transmission both in Thailand and in Indonesia over the last 2 years in small clusters of cases. But what we haven't seen and what people are really looking for is a virus that easily transmits between human beings like influenza normally does. You know, every year we have an annual influenza pandemic, if you will, But it's usually a very mild pandemic. Many people have antibodies, or it's included in the annual vaccine that we get here in the United States. And some other countries, mostly wealthy countries like Canada and Europe, also have a vaccination strategy. The difference here would be that right now we don't have a vaccine, although that's rapidly changing. And secondly, this is a brand new virus for us. We would not have seen anything like this virus over the last 50 years, so all of us would be very, very vulnerable to it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in the terms of the transmission, what we've just seen in this last week is that there was a 17-year-old case of a teenager who died in Thailand, in northern Thailand, about 2 weeks ago. And as a result of that, the Thais are evaluating about 144 people who they believe may have bird flu, and they're in the process of doing that testing. Meanwhile, all of those people are being kept virtually under quarantine. At the same time, over in Indonesia, in the same site where we had the family cluster where 6 out of 8 family members died a couple of months ago, there's been a new cluster of 3 cases. So this is a really active situation. If you back up from it and take a look, since 2003, we've had an ever-increasing number of human cases each year, sort of in the same geographic areas. And it seems to peak in terms of that human activity in the winter. It's mostly flu, very severe flu in children with a greater than a 50% mortality rate at this point. So that's really where you're watching. And since it's been every year a little bit greater, the thinking is there may be some kind of tipping point that we'll reach at some point when it will really become a competent human-to-human transmission situation.
Mm-hmm. And Dr. Kimball, you made an indirect reference a moment ago. I have a news item here from about 10 days ago. GlaxoSmithKline says that its new vaccine against bird flu is more effective than any previous version, works at a far smaller dose. I'm not critical of Glaxo at this point. This kind of sounds like forward-looking marketing statements. But how will we know if a vaccine is effective? Because isn't this a kind of developing virus that we haven't had success in isolating and killing before?
Well, it's a little bit of art as well as science in vaccine development. You can test the safety certainly in humans, but you can't actually test the efficacy, mm-hmm. as you say, because until the epidemic is here, you won't really know. But that's fairly standard for flu vaccination strategies, so I'm not that concerned about that.
Mm-hmm.
I think it is a bit of forward marketing. On the other hand, some of the modeling studies, you know, we have now got mathematical models where you can take a country and you can create a scenario and you can run it, you know, many thousands of times using the computing strength that we now have. And according to those models and some of the excellent modeling that's been done, if you have a vaccine that's just 50% or more effective and you couple that with really fast administration of Tamiflu, you could get pretty good control of an influenza outbreak.
Mm-hmm. And do you have any worries that this might not respond to the existing treatments that we have? I mean, I know about some of the real high-powered antibiotics, but what you described is that we have this increasing resistance that humans have developed. So is there a possibility that we could throw everything at it and this H5N1 or avian flu could overwhelm us?
Well, I think you got to sort that out just a little bit. We have just one antiviral that's now on the market that's effective, and that's Tamiflu.
Mm-hmm.
As far as antibiotics, they don't work against a virus. They work against a microbe,
mm-hmm.
A bacteria. But in this case, you are down to Tamiflu. There's a lot of work going on looking for other antivirals that perhaps would serve as backup. And so, yeah, it's a fairly thin net, if you will. And honestly, we have had trouble with antigenic matching, as we call it, in vaccines before. I don't know if you remember 2 years ago, but there was a key strain called the Fujian strain, which was actually circulated, that didn't make it into the vaccine. And so you had a lot of illness even in vaccinated people because the vaccine didn't match the circulating strain. So it's an imperfect system.
Yeah.
You know, it absolutely is. And the other side of it that's so difficult to predict is this is a, you know, this is a virus that has one single strand of what we call RNA as opposed to two strands, which is normal for a lot of other viruses, and that's how human cells are constructed. So this means that this little critter adapts a lot more quickly, evolves a lot more quickly, changes a lot more quickly as it passes from person to person, chicken to person, circulates in poultry. It's a very changeable virus. So you may have a vaccine today that's very good for a strain that was, you know, isolated 2 months ago,
mm-hmm.
and when the actual pandemic hits, it may not be very effective. And that's just the reality of Mother Nature's game here.
We're talking with Dr. Anne-Marie Kimball. Her book is Risky Trade, Infectious Disease in the Era of Global Trade. If you have a question about avian flu, about mad cow, or something else that's on your mind, give us a call. 888-5-PETER-B, 888-5-PETER-B. That's 888-573-8372. We'll continue in just a moment right here on the Peter B. Collins Show. KRXA 540, Progressive Talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Do you have a living trust? Lawyers on Duty is offering a living trust package for just $995. If you're single, only $895. Give your loved ones the safety net by saving them thousands of dollars by avoiding cumbersome legal proceedings. At Lawyers on Duty, they're available and affordable. With over 1,000 living trusts completed locally, they'll work with you to avoid costly probate. Behind Rosine's on Alvarado Street, downtown Monterey. Lawyers on Duty, 375-5100. Alan Kaplan, owner.
Did you hear the show when God called?
Being an atheist myself, having God calling yesterday was a really big blow
wow.
to all of us.
I think I can go out and say another case of a person's life being changed courtesy of the show and KRXA
yeah,
Radio.
Yeah. Thanks, guys.
The show, weekday mornings, 9 to 10 on KRXA 540.
Come on in and you will see the Central Avenue Bakery. Smell the bread, try the scones. Everything's a taste you want to take it all home. Vegetarian is a killer affair. We make our meals in a kosher kitchen. I'll make mine falafel with hummus too. A side of couscous and a baba ghanoush, yeah. Open at 7 every day. Have a cup of coffee or your morning latte. Come on in and sit right down. It's the friendliest place in town. Central Avenue Bakery.
In PG.
For an unforgettable omelet experience, visit the Central Avenue Bakery today. 173 Central Avenue at the corner of Dewey. PG.
Good afternoon. I'm Larry Olson on KRXA with traffic. A reminder, if you're heading to the San Jose International Airport, emergency road work has closed Airport Boulevard at Coleman Avenue. A detour has been set up. Coleman onto 101 to 87 to Skyport Drive. Allow extra time to get to Mineta International Airport. There are heavy, heavy delays reported in the area if you're heading there. Monterey North Highway 1 at Fremont, accident, two cars right shoulder. Northbound Highway 1 at Munros, it's a two-car crash, that working on the right shoulder as well. Live Oak, Soquel Avenue at 7th, an accident has been reported. Need a bed before you head back to school? Don't miss the great bedroom set deal at Cost Plus World Market. Buy our Palermo bed set and dresser and get a free bedside table, a savings valued at over $200. I'm Larry Olson with traffic on KRXA 540.
Useless to resist us.
Yeah, microbes, viruses, it's useless to resist them.
I'm Peter B. Collins. We continue on the PBC show today with Dr. Anne Marie Kimball, an epidemiologist from the University of Washington, the author of this new book called Risky Trade, Infectious Disease in the Era of Global Trade. And Dr. Kimball, I took note in your book about the open-air markets and the live animals that are sold at you know, farmers markets and organized markets in China. And
right.
I've traveled there just a little bit, and it was an eye-opener to see live critters, you know, roosters in a cage, and you could buy live fish, live snakes, turtles, rabbits. I mean, virtually everything that we find already slaughtered and cleaned and prepared under cellophane shrink wrap in our supermarket is available in China, you know, live, and, you know, you get to take the critter home and decide when exactly you're going to process it. But doesn't that create a whole arena for the contagion to occur, particularly when it comes to this avian flu that we're concerned about? And can we prevail upon the Chinese to try to clean up these marketplaces and bring them up to at least second world standards?
Well, you know, there's a lot of cultural perspective to what you're saying. I would say that my Chinese hosts, when I've talked about this with them, would say, well, you know, how fresh do you want your food? We want it very, very fresh. And so we know how fresh it is when it's in our own hands to, you know, to slaughter an animal or kill a chicken. And they've got a point there, because as we look at our nicely cellophaned meats in our markets, we don't actually know how fresh they are or what the processing has been behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a cultural difference. We would prefer not to know, and I think most people in Asia would prefer to know exactly how fresh and exactly what happened between animal and plate, if you will. So that's one point. But the other point you're making is really interesting, and that's the whole question of cleaning up the markets. After 1997, after their first cluster of bird flu, the officials in Hong Kong did a terrific job of taking those markets, which were sprawling centers of ducks mixed with geese, mixed with chickens, all in cages, all piled up on top of one another. They cleaned out the markets. They segregated the market so that, you know, chickens were not near to ducks, were not near to geese, which is very important for avian influenza. And that, and killing over a million chickens after that cluster,
mm-hmm.
they were successful in getting a handle on it. So cleaning up those live bird markets has been very much a part of what Asian countries are doing.
Mm-hmm. And let me just turn then to our domestic situation. It was Christmas time of 2002 when a BSE-infected cow was discovered at the, I think it's called Moses Lake, outside of Seattle. And we talked to the guy who actually slaughtered that cow. His name's Dave Louthan. And it was a fascinating saga over the ensuing time period, because there were alerts sent out, and we know that some of the tainted beef was shipped to California. But California authorities were forbidden by federal law from notifying consumers about where this potentially tainted product had been shipped. And fortunately, some of the wholesalers and retailers who received it voluntarily disclosed that they had it, and of course they destroyed it. But it left me very unconvinced that the United States Department of Agriculture is there to protect us, the consumer. I think they're there to protect the producers. And what we've seen is Ann Veneman came out of the cattle industry and ran the USDA. She's gone now, but I don't think the that coziness has changed that significantly. And just about 2 weeks ago, the USDA announced that we have cleaned up our BSE mad cow problem, and therefore we are going to discontinue testing at the level which still didn't meet my satisfaction. They were random testing a larger number of cattle being slaughtered, but not the entire herd. And this occurred at the same time that Japanese importers recertified American beef and have permitted it to be exported from the U.S. to Japan once again. So what is your take on the current risk from BSE, mad cow disease, and do you believe the government is attempting to protect consumers or the producers?
Well, the second question is hard to answer. The first question, I found it mystifying, frankly, because we don't do an awful lot of testing for BSC. And if you look at the global reach of the contamination with meat and bone meal, it's certainly been very, very broad. I mean, Japan has had cows with BSC. Canada has had cows with BSC. And I certainly remember that Christmas time cow that fell over in our own state.
Mm-hmm.
The issue with BSE is that it's really a consumer confidence issue, and I think what you're seeing as the Department of Agriculture may be responding to what I understand the cattle industry's stance is, which is, you know, this is a lot of bother and it's kind of expensive. On the other hand,
I'll pay a nickel a burger.
A little further down the food chain, I think you're hearing from some of the larger transnational food industry folk like McDonald's, keep this in place because it causes us consumer confidence issues. So you really have to take a look at the fact that we are living in a global market, and whatever the United States can do, both for its own consumers but on a broader basis, to consider the confidence of consumers all around the world in United States food products, we should be doing. It's really a false economy, in my view, to cut back on something as valuable as potentially detecting mad cow disease in your herds.
Mm-hmm. And tell us a little bit about Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, which is how it appears in humans. It takes 10 years to incubate, and when it does, it's one of the most grisly things that can happen to a human being.
Yes, we've always had a sporadic instance of this disease, which you learn about in medical school. It's one of those that you really never want to get. It had been pretty much a disease very, very rare among very elderly people, and it's pretty much your straightforward neurologic degenerative disease where people die within a couple of years if they're in their 70s. And again, it's 1 in 2 million sort of instance in terms of its normal occurrence. What we saw with this cluster related to beef was that it was occurring in young people, people in their late 20s and in their 30s in the United Kingdom, so it was called new variant because certainly it was different.
Mm-hmm.
We hadn't seen it in that age group, and there was a lot of case control work and epi studies, epidemiologic studies, which I recount in the book.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to have to stop us here. We're just out of time, and I can't control the clock.
To finish up, that really showed the link.
Okay. Risky Trade is the book. Dr. Anne-Marie Kimball has been our guest here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Nice to talk with you.
Nice to talk with you. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
There are radio talk shows about sports, politics, money, sex, and religion. Now there's a talk show for parents and everyone else who cares for and about children. It's Childhood Matters, every Sunday from 9 to 10 a.m. here on KRXA 540. I'm the host, Rona Renner, the mother of four, a new grandmother, a nurse, and parent educator. Listen and call in Childhood Matters every Sunday from 9 to 10 here on KRXA 540.
Would you like to be part of a conversation that might not only inspire your golf game, but have you thinking differently about sports, about learning, and about performance? Join golf pro and best-selling author Fred Shoemaker on KRXA 540 Saturday mornings at 8 a.m. for Extraordinary Golf, some uncommon conversations about golf, and maybe even a little beyond golf. Extraordinary Golf, Saturday mornings on KRXA 540 at 8 a.m.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News. I'm Harley Carnes. The Middle East today saw and heard more of the same. 190 Hezbollah rockets sailed into Israel, killing four civilians. And CBS's Lee Cowan says Israel went after Hezbollah targets from the air.
The victims were workers loading peaches and plums into delivery trucks. But to Israeli warplanes, they must have appeared to be doing something much more menacing. Four missiles struck without warning, aimed at buildings Israeli intelligence believed housed Hezbollah weapons. At least two dozen were killed. Hezbollah struck back, lobbing more than 200 rockets into Israel. Some hit some 50 miles south of the Lebanese border and within 30 miles of Tel Aviv. Those are their deepest strikes yet.
Israeli officials flatly declared today they are winning the war and slowly but surely eliminating Hezbollah. There's a break in the serial shooter case in Phoenix. Not one suspect arrested, but two.
These are the two monsters we've been hunting.
That's Mayor Phil Gordon.
The detectives have been working through a litany of information from all over the place. The community, the thousands of calls that have come in, the working relationship with all the law enforcement agencies, putting all the information together.
Assistant Police Chief in Phoenix, Kevin Robinson, 6 people were killed, 17 were wounded in more than a year of snipings. The director of the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms has resigned. Carl Truscott was appointed to the job in April of 2004, says he wants to pursue private interests. The flood threat in El Paso, certainly not over. The devastation already caused by high water is an emergency. Reporter Darren Hunt says they need the kind of help FEMA can bring.
Major destruction. There was a levee that broke out there in a particular neighborhood that caused major flooding. There's probably hundreds of people in El Paso that have at least 2 to 3 feet of water in their homes. They're trying to pump water out at this point to the streets.
The evacuation order's been lifted. Looks as though the shaky earthen dam on the Mexican side of the river will hold. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice says with change in the winds, the U.S. stands by, willing, even anxious to help Cubans if what they decide they want is democracy.
It has long been the hope of the United States that a free, independent, and democratic Cuba would be more than just a close neighbor. It would be a close friend. This is our goal now more than ever.
Nothing like petty bureaucrats with a little power. In Beijing, 2 Chinese officials in charge of the electricity in Hunan province did not get an invitation to the new hotel's opening party. So they turned out the lights to the whole neighborhood and told the 2 women who managed the hotel they could have the power back on, 1 hour of lights for every bottle of booze. The women drank. Took a while to get the lights back on. On Wall Street, the Dow lost 2 points. NASDAQ was off about 7. Oil prices down 70 cents at $74.76 a barrel. This is CBS News.
Hey, how come you always get to pick the paint color?
Okay, what color do you want to paint?
I don't know. What do you think? It's the home makeover event at Sherwin-Williams. This Thursday through Monday, save 25% on our high-quality paints and stains, 15% on Duration Premium coatings, and save an extra 25% on Easy Change wallpaper patterns, too. Hurry, sale ends Monday.
Ask Sherwin-Williams.
For locations, visit SherwinWilliams.com. Some exclusions apply.
Pet owners praise it. The hotel staff loves it. Parents rave about it. Algae sufferers applaud it. Senior citizens are agog about it. Now it's your turn. Hi, I'm David Orrick. Everybody's singing the praises of my 8-pound Orrick XL because it's the best vacuum that ever touched their floors. Try one risk-free for 30 days. Call 1-800-989-4200. 1-800-989-4200.
Arthur Lee has died after a kaleidoscopic life and career.
Psychedelic pioneer Arthur Lee, architect of the band Love, has died in Memphis.
Watching all the people die.
Lee called himself the first so-called black hippie, forming the multiracial band Love in L.A. in 1965. The group's Forever Changes is considered a seminal work, often voted one of the greatest albums of all time. Lee was volatile. His unpredictable behavior sent him behind bars for illegal possession of a gun. He died in his hometown of Memphis from leukemia. Arthur Lee was 61.
What are you seeing? How do you feel?
Bill Vitka, CBS News.
My name is...
Everything ends, including heat waves. Temperatures in the 80s have overtaken much of the eastern seaboard. Of course, it was 100 degrees in Dallas and Fort Worth, but that's Texas. Harley Carnes, CBS News.
Come into your local Goodyear retailer for the Goodyear MVP Tire Sale. Plus, get up to a $40 cash card with a purchase of 4 selected Goodyear tires. And ask how you can double your cash card value up to $80 on qualifying purchases. Our lineup is stacked from top to bottom with Goodyear's most valuable products, like the award-winning Assurance and Forterra tires featuring triple tread technology. Hurry, because both the Goodyear MVP Tire Sale and cash card offers end August 26th. Call 1-800-GOODYEAR for the complete details and the retailer near you. Certain restrictions apply.
CompUSA email bank.
Today, Jack emails, Dear CompUSA, got any deals for a starving student? Yeah, Jack. Now through Saturday, we're giving away $10,000 every day. Plus, we've got hundreds of killer deals, like $280 off a compact laptop with AMD Turion 64 processor. It's under $500 after rebates. So get to CompUSA's back-to-school sale, because we got it, we get it.
No purchase necessary. Void or prohibited. Store visit required. See store for details.
Listening to KRXA 540.
You've got the Peter B. Collins Show, and I'm glad you're listening.
We live in a mean time, and an aggressive time, a painful time.
The ripple effect of electronic voting machines and integrity of our elections is rocking the nation. If you listen to the Peter B. Collins Show, you know that I consider this a fundamental and very significant issue of our time. And every week in this final hour on Friday, we talk with Brad Friedman, the proprietor of bradblog.com. He's our go-to guy on election integrity issues. And Brad continues his summer trek across America. And at his suggestion, we've invited an activist from Arizona to join us on the program today. He is John Brakey, and he has formed an organization called Americans United for Democracy, Integrity, and Transparency in Elections. And the acronym is Audit AZ. Joining us from Tucson, it's John Brakey. Hello, John.
Hello, Peter. Big pleasure.
Well, welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show today. And Brad did tip me off that you really are annoyed when we play the Achy Brakey song.
God, don't do it.
Well, I've got an upgrade for you, though. It's the Weird Al version. Here we go.
Don't play that song, that achy breaky song, the most annoying song I know. And if you play that song, that achy breaky song, I might blow up my radio.
Don't you like that better than the original?
I think so. That is a lot better.
All right, and you spell your name B-R-A-K-E-Y.
That's correct.
So people don't get confused. What brought you to this movement, John? Why do you care about elections?
Because I'm a grandfather, and I love my country. And what happened to me November 2nd woke me up.
What happened to you?
I was a cluster captain, and I had four precincts. And three of them were run by very weird people. And I've traced it down to a man named Nathan Sproul. And Nathan, by the way, was the sixth largest expense the Republican National Committee had at $8.3 million. You can read about this in the book by Mark Crispin Miller.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Mark was on our show a couple of weeks ago.
Fabulous man.
Mm-hmm. So tell us exactly what happened there.
I was a cluster captain. My job was to get the vote out, and I was running around and having difficulties. In fact, the precincts had people who were very hostile and tried forcing us out. And the more I investigated, I found that they were doing tricks and switches, which is basically involved with the provisional ballot and early ballot.
Mm-hmm.
And I give a good example is Maria comes into the precinct. She ordered an early ballot. She's a mother of two, Hispanic, and she ordered an early ballot but procrastinated. She gets in line. They say you have to vote a provisional, and she says, okay. She fills out her provisional ballot, puts it in an envelope, and she leaves.
Mm-hmm.
Not the end of story. They tricked her to sign the signature roster, and this happened 40-some times. And then they went ahead, marked the first ballot she drew as spoiled, and sent the second ballot filled out and put it into the optical scanner. This was what we call a stack. The reason for the stack is that there's no such thing as random audits. If you look at Ohio, for example, 86 out of the 88 counties did not randomly select the precincts that they used.
Right.
And so I started chasing down who did this, and I knew about Nathan Sproul because he was charged in two states, and he used to run the... He was the executive director of the Republican Party in Arizona up to 2002,
mm-hmm.
and he also was the executive director of the Christian Coalition.
Oh, is he a crony of Ralph Reed's?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, Ralph Reed at the same time in 2002 was the chair of the Georgia Republican Party, Max Cleveland.
Wow.
Hideous.
Yeah. Okay, now I can connect those dots. And
yeah, that's what I do.
I can understand what motivates you. Now, you are a co-founder of Americans United for Democracy, Integrity, and Transparency in Elections, and you shorten that to Audit AZ, and there's a website at www.auditaz.org. I'm going to repeat that, auditaz.org. And let's bring on your colleague there, Donna Branch Gilby, is the chair of the Pima County Democratic Party. Donna, welcome to our program today.
Thank you very much, Peter.
Tell me a little bit about politics in Arizona. I'm pleased that our program is heard late in the evening on the Progressive Talk Station, KPHX, in Phoenix. But I'm still learning about the landscape there. And from here in California, I see two very interesting but different kinds of channels. One is you have a lot of conservative Republicans who win election in Arizona, but there's also a very strong progressive movement. You've got the Clean Money campaign. You've had them since 1999, and there are other measures that you've used to try to level the playing field and make elections more fair and transparent. What's your take on the current state of the election processes in Arizona?
Well, I think we're in trouble. Part of this state, we're kind of schizophrenic. We have a very progressive, bright woman lawyer, Janet Napolitano, one of the 10 outstanding governors of the country.
Yeah, former then, FCC commissioner, I recall.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And then she is working with a very conservative legislature, in which I must say our conservative, arch-conservative Republican opponents have been very clever in focusing on the primary elections. And that's really where they win the election.
Mm-hmm.
So that when you look at our legislature, it's we're only within two votes of the governor's veto being overridden. Maricopa County, where Phoenix is located in a multi-million person metropolitan area, really carries the bulk of the votes. But in Pima County, where I'm the county chair,
that's Tucson.
That's Tucson, Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
We have had the university here for over 100 years, and we have a lot of people who read and think and are looking ahead and want to be here, and their children and grandchildren to be here. And so they're saying, hey, let's look ahead and not just consume everything and focus strictly on profits. So it's a very different feel politically between Maricopa County, where Phoenix is, and Pima County, where Tucson is.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't have the number of votes but we have a big, enthusiastic, well-educated, and committed Democratic Party and volunteers. So we're actually responsible for electing Governor Napolitano. That the votes here made the difference.
Mm-hmm. Well, and maybe you can do some magic and retire John Kyle this fall.
Well, that's certainly our goal, but so much, as you know, depends on what happens with our voting machines.
Indeed, and we have serious concerns here in California as a result of the very close special election to replace the convicted felon Duke Cunningham in District 50, and I'm sure you've read about that at Brad Blog or perhaps heard other reports as well.
Watch it closely.
Yeah, well, we're doing everything we can, and there's now a legal challenge that was filed earlier this week. Paul Leto is a talented attorney who was involved in that very close election and post-election scramble in Washington State, where Christine Gregoire won by, I think, the final tally was 46 votes or something like that statewide. So he's very sharp. We've talked to him twice, and I am encouraged by the efforts underway there. Donna, just a quick question for you. In your estimation, do the Democratic leaders in Arizona understand the serious risks posed by election problems?
Well, yes, I think to some extent, not only the Democratic leaders, but the Republican leaders as well, because just as our legislative session was coming to a close, they passed Senate Bill 1557, which mandates a 2% of the precincts being randomly selected and having those votes audited. Now, our concern is that this because Arizona has a tradition of being racist in its conduct of elections, we are still under the supervision of the Department of Justice. And so any change that we make to our election laws has to be reviewed and approved by the Department of Justice. We've put that on a fast track. Hopefully they will get back to us right away. In the meantime, our Secretary of State, who is Jan Brewer, should be composing the panel to develop procedures for doing this mandatory audit, but we understand that's not happening. Hmm. Now, people should know, your listeners should know, that Jan Brewer was the chair of the reelection committee for George W. Bush in
Arizona.
She's
got the Blackwell-Harris problem.
Yes. Hmm.
And we were worse. I want you to know that. If we were the size of Ohio, we would have had 283,000 provisionals. Ohio is 2.5 times bigger. We were the third worst state per capita.
Yeah,
so very interesting.
We have to go to
a break here. That's Donna Branch Gilby, the chair of the Pima County Democratic Party near Tucson, Arizona. Actually in Tucson, not near. And John Brakey is with us, too. He's the founder of Audit AZ. As we continue, we'll talk about the decision by the Pima County Board of Supervisors to authorize the use of electronic voting machines. It's an interesting decision with some very serious restrictions. We'll talk about that coming up next. And if you have a question or comment, there's room for your call, too. At 888-5-PETER-B. That's 888-573-8372 here at the Peter B. Collins Show. Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
Hans Auto Repair in Seaside is hands down the finest Volvo maintenance and repair shop in Monterey County. Owners Mike Brooks and Tracy Palacco are both factory trained in Volvo service and repair. They provide outstanding quality and great service at reasonable prices. They only work on Volvos, so you know that your Volvo will be in caring and skilled hands. Hans Auto Repair is at 384 Olympia Avenue in Seaside, or you can call Mike and Tracy at 583-9820. That's 583-9820. Miguel Sarmiento, owner and chef of the Mexicali Grill in New Monterey, cordially invites you to visit his restaurant and enjoy quality Mexican food prepared with California seasonings and sauces, all with personalized, attentive service. Miguel has more than 14 years of experience preparing Italian, Hawaiian, Mexican, French, and American dishes in restaurants throughout Monterey County. Looking to savor the best Mexicali cuisine served with great margaritas or fine imported or domestic beers? Visit the Mexicali Grill today, located at 204 Lighthouse Avenue at the corner of Reeside Avenue in New Monterey. The Mexicali Grill is open daily for lunch from 11 to 3 and for dinner from 5 to 9. For takeout orders, call 375-9801. That's 375-9801. Miguel has a message for all Central Coast residents who appreciate delicious, high-quality Mexican food at reasonable prices.
Todos son bienvenidos en el Mexicali Grill. Try us. You'll like us a lot.
Hi, I'm Scott Dick, host of the Tasty Planet radio show. Every Saturday from 1 to 3 p.m., I explore the world of food, wine, and travel across the U.S. and around the world. I interview nationally known writers, winemakers, chefs, restaurateurs, and others that make our world so delicious. Join me and my guests every Saturday from 1 to 3 p.m. for tasty new shows. Sponsored by the Monterey County Vintners and Growers Association's 14th Annual Winemaker Celebration on August 12th from noon until 4 p.m. For more information, go to the web at montereywines.org.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. I'm Larry Olson with traffic on KRXA 540. King City South 101 before Broadway. It's a bundle of debris clearing out of lanes. San Martin Avenue at 101, it's a three-car crash, that all on the right shoulder. Marina Reservation Road at West Blanca Road, solo car went off the roadway and landed in a ditch. Hollister Fairview at Hillcrest, stalled car, partially blocking the lane. And just a reminder, Highway 1 Devil Slide is fully open during commute hours and on weekends, so congestion should begin to lighten up as you make your way from Half Moon Bay onto the peninsula. Home of epic entertainment and sizzling summer events, James Brown, Alice Cooper, and the Reno Airwaces. Visit RenoHilton.com for best rates and packages. I'm Larry Olson with traffic on KRXA 540.
Time, we're under budget. We're the Peter B. Collins Show. I'm glad you're listening wherever you happen to be. We're talking about elections and election integrity, serious issues being discussed all across America. And today we're spotlighting Arizona and Tucson in particular. Pima County is where Tucson is located. Donna Branch Gilby is with us. She is the chair of the Pima County Democratic Party. And also with us is John Brakey, the co-founder of Audit AZ, Americans United for Democracy, Integrity, and Transparency in Elections. And John, let me turn to you next because you sent us the email with the updated information. Just today, your county board of supervisors authorized the use of Diebold TSX voting machines in the November election, but it is sharply limited, as I read this, to the use by disabled voters. Is that the only use that the electronic machines will be employed for?
Well, you know, you can't just say that you can just have disabled because it's discriminative. Other people could use it, but we're going to have a 100% audit. They're going to drill a hole in the machine, believe it or not, that you can't remove the card and get the on and off button working. They're removing the doors to make sure people who do use it look at their ballot. They're removing the plexiglass, which is hard to look through.
That's what covers the toilet paper roll, which is the paper record.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So do you feel that with those methods that we've kind of stripped away the risks of using these machines?
I don't want to use them at all, but I would say this. It was 100% audit, and if the person checks their ballot, I would say that doing it this way, as strange as this may sound, is better than an optical scan because we know that the optical scans can be hacked and how the back door works.
Mm-hmm.
I know how to hack it.
Yeah.
Okay? And that's 100% audit. And that's kind of crazy because they're the most hardest ballot to audit ever invented by man.
So then why not just go back to paper ballots?
And a pencil.
Yeah, I mean, if they're all going to be hand-counted anyway, why bother with the machines to begin with?
Because of the Help America Vote Act, which should be called Hack America Vote Act. You know, it's just like clear skies and healthy force, all Orwellian.
Yeah, it comes out of the Orwell department.
And they gave too much power to Secretary of States, and if they didn't do it, they could have been sued by the federal government. How do you like that, Peter?
Uh-huh.
It's awful.
Yeah.
These people now know, because of the persistency of our group and, of course, you know, merging with the Democratic Party here and getting them woke up, and we're working on that nationally. You know, to make change, you got to sit at the table.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we did. Because, you know, election integrity to me is not about the right or left. It's about right and wrong.
Yeah,
table do I sit at and make change?
I certainly agree. Donna Branch Gilby, are you comfortable with these terms, or at least as comfortable as possible?
Well, I think it's... It was great to hear each of the supervisors say publicly that they acknowledged there were very serious security issues with the Diebold touchscreen machine,
mm-hmm.
and yet they voted to use them. That's the part I don't get. They could have stood up for the protecting the vote and really made given a signal to the Secretary of States around the country who are part of this vote stealing scheme, to that you know, elected officials were onto their game, but they parried, I guess, or did some kind of maneuver where they at least gave us the audit. And we hope that audit can be carried forward, because our Secretary of State has a habit of saying, oh, no, you can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
So we're kind of holding our breath.
Do you agree with John, Donna, that HAVA, the Help America Vote Act, essentially ties the hands of these local authorities?
It does, because it requires things where the testing is not complete, and it's not there are gaps in the testing procedures. There are other gaps as well. And you know, I trust Jimmy Carter, and when he is depressed after having served on the HAVA board and having developed that, it tells me something is off. And I remember when that report came out, he was not a happy man, and yet there was something keeping him from being able to act effectively on that board.
Yeah, there was the Carter-Baker Commission that followed HAVA, and it was disappointing because, and I understand that President Carter didn't have complete control of that commission, and that Jim Baker is an unbridled Republican aggressive activist. He was the one who went into Florida to maintain the stolen vote for the Republicans in 2000. But he was co-chair of that commission, and they did make some reasonable recommendations, but of course one of them was for a photo ID, which is a pet proposal of Republicans as a way of limiting the participation of groups that typically vote Democratic.
Right.
So what we see is that commission was used under the guise of enhancing and ensuring the rights of voters, while many of the tactics that were employed there are designed to limit the participation by certain types of voters.
Right. Again, the wording, the titles are so misleading. You think this is going to be moving us forward to transparency, secure elections, secure vote results, and it's actually the opposite.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. John, would you like to add something?
Well, I'd like to add one thing, is that what we did is really good, and it went working together, and the message to send out there is that to make change, you got to sit at the table. We woke up a lot of people. Pima County knows that we have a problem. And you know, we're pushing the DNC very, very hard to start a clearinghouse. We may be very close to having that. We're the only party in this country that I know of that has a Democratic Election Integrity Committee that's doing things.
Mm-hmm.
And if we could do that all over the country, what could we do to at least document when they steal in 2006? Because they will.
Yeah. We're going to take a break and continue. Can you both stay with us for another few minutes?
Absolutely.
Donna Branch Gilby, chair of the Pima County Democratic Party, Tucson, and also with us, John Brakey from Audit AZ. Visit their website, auditaz.org. We'll continue in just a moment. If you have a question, join us, 888-5-PETER-B. That's 888-5-PETER-B. 888-573-8372 puts you through to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
It's Behind the Wheel, the Consumer New Car Review. I'm Peter B. Collins. This week, I've been behind the wheel of the 2006 Suzuki Grand Vitara, a midsize SUV that seats five. With four-wheel drive and a 2.7-liter fuel-injected six-cylinder engine and a five-speed automatic, the Grand Vitara performed very well on a weekend drive to the coast. Good acceleration and passing power, easy to handle, quick to respond. My only complaint is that the four-wheel drive setup makes the steering a little tight at low speeds and requires a bigger turning radius. Inside, it's roomy and attractive with all the accessories you need, including a 6-CD changer with a subwoofer to annoy other drivers. Suzuki offers generous warranties and a great price. The mileage could be better. By the numbers, the 2006 Suzuki Grand Vitara gets 19 mpg in the city, 23 on the highway, and stickers in California for about $23,000. Behind the wheel, I'm Peter B. Collins.
Hello. I'm here to tell you about Central Avenue Bakery in beautiful Pacific Grove. Every day we feature the finest and freshest healthy whole grain foods with vegan and wheat-free options for those so inclined. We mill our own organic, fresh whole grain flour daily. Galina, our Russian pastry chef, turns those fresh whole grains into delicious masterpieces. Muffins, cakes, cookies, pies, banana chocolate bars, macaroons. She adds new items all the time. We also have a variety of whole grain breads, fresh homemade sandwiches, soups, and veggie entrees made with mostly organic ingredients. Our all-you-can-eat Sunday buffet with the top vegetarian entrees, soups, salads, and desserts is locally famous. We also welcome groups, parties, and catering orders. Stop in for a latte, snack, or full meal. You'll come back again and again. Come visit us at 173 Central Avenue at the corner of Dewey in the old Granary building, just two blocks from the aquarium. Or give us a call at 373-2000. That's 373-2000. Central Avenue Bakery, where healthy and delicious go hand in hand.
The Grove Market in Pacific Grove is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Locally owned and operated for 37 years by the Higuera family, the Grove Market boasts the finest selections of just-picked conventional and organic produce our Central Coast farms have to offer. The Grove Market's full-service meat department specializes in the highest quality, choice, fresh-cut, and prepared meats. Local artisanal bakeries deliver breads and other delectable baked goods hot from the oven every morning. To perfect your gourmet home-cooked meal, choose from the Grove Market's outstanding selection of Monterey wines. The Grove Market features competitive prices, personalized service, and home delivery in PG and New Monterey. You can't go wrong at the Grove Market. So shop Monday through Saturday from 8 to 7 and 9 to 6 on Sundays in downtown Pacific Grove, 242 Forest Avenue, just above Lighthouse. The Grove Market, where the locals shop.
I am attorney Sean Mills. Sometimes life does not take the direction that you plan. If you find yourself in need of an honest attorney, call me. I can advise you on both criminal and civil matters. Do not settle for an attorney who simply went to college and law school when you can work with an attorney with significant life experience who uses a common sense approach to everyday legal problems. If you think you need an attorney, I will be glad to offer you a no-obligation consultation and evaluation of your legal issue with no sugarcoating. If you think you have a potential legal issue, it is important that you speak to a qualified attorney as soon as possible. Call me at 831-648-7060. That's 831-648-7060. I am attorney Sean Mills.
And the Peter B. Collins Show continues. I'm glad you're listening on this fabulous Friday, 33 minutes past the hour. And in just a few minutes, we'll be joined by John Gideon from VotersUnite.org. We continue our discussion of election integrity with two individuals from Arizona, from the Tucson area in Pima County. Donna Branch Gilby is the chair of the Pima County Democratic Party. And John Brakey is with us from AuditAZ.org. And by the way, our music of the moment is from Bob Geldof and the Boomtown Rats. And the tune is called Whitehall 1212. That's the number for Scotland Yard. That's the number you would call if you were a witness to a stolen election in the United Kingdom. And John and Donna, I want to return to the discussion here of the what I would call conditional approval for electronic voting machines in Pima County, the Diebold TSX, because, as you pointed out, all kinds of safeguards have been approved as well, and there will be a 100% hand count of the paper records produced by the TSX machine. We have to hope that there isn't any kind of vote flipping, and we have seen in many jurisdictions around the country, most recently in the district in Georgia, where Congresswoman Cynthia McKinney is facing a runoff in a couple of weeks because she didn't clear in the first round. And a number of her supporters told her that when they pressed the screen for Cynthia McKinney, it registered a vote for her opponent. And we have seen this happen when we talked to Attorney Paul Leto about vote flipping on touchscreen voting machines. He said that his investigation shows that he's never seen it happen where somebody was attempting to vote for a Republican and it flipped to Democrat. And that, of course, makes many of us highly suspicious, perhaps even a little paranoid. Donna Branch Gilby, when you look at that situation, are you comfortable that you have the best conditions possible in still complying with the Help America Vote Act?
Well, no, obviously. I mean, the ideal situation would be to have voting equipment that actually recorded the vote correctly to start with, instead of having to, after the fact, prove that there was an error.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's tragic that in this country, which is, is held up as the model of democracy, that we are even questioning our elections,
mm-hmm.
and that other countries have managed. I mean, like Canada is able to do their elections and do it on paper and have a hand recount and figure out how to have it all counted in 4 hours. And you'd think that we with the accuracy and the security of electronic gaming machines,
yes,
making no errors, you think that that kind of thinking and technological skill could be applied to voting machines, but
well, I prefer the example of the automatic 20 machine at my bank, because I've never been shorted money and I've never gotten a receipt that was inaccurate either for a deposit or a withdrawal from an ATM. I am more concerned though about the gambling machines, because we saw a story just a few months back about a young man who sits at a computer at a casino in Las Vegas, and he actually controls the payouts and is in real-time control of the operation and the cash flow of those machines.
Oops.
So that gives me a little bit of pause.
Yes, the ATM prep. And you know who makes most of the ATM machines?
Diebold.
Yes.
That's right. John Brakey.
We know they can do it right if they want to.
John Brakey, your concerns about vote flipping, even with this paper trail that's going to be counted 100%?
I'm very concerned about it. And, you know, we had Bruce Funk in from Utah. And, you know, one of the things that the Pima County administrators tried to do is say how great Utah was. And, you know, knowing Bruce, I said, Bruce, fly in. We need you. And he really laid it into the board what he knew and how the misinformation that we were being provided here.
Mm-hmm.
And, yes, the best way to vote is paper and pencil and hand count.
Yeah.
Transparency. You know, Ronald Reagan was right. Trust but verify.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Yeah.
We do good at trusting. We do very bad at verifying.
Now, my final question for the two of you relates to the posture of the National Democratic Party. In June, I was in Washington, and I was stunned in a positive way by a speech given by Congresswoman Jan Schakowsky, a Democrat from the north suburbs of Chicago. And she said that she believes Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s report in Rolling Stone that the Ohio election was gamed and stolen. She then apologized to activists like you for not taking the issue seriously enough to date. And she promised to try to get Rahm Emanuel, who is a top player in the Democratic Party, runs the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, to really take these issues seriously. And while I was in Washington, I interviewed Susie Turnbull, who is a deputy chair of the DNC, and she assured me that the National Democratic Party is waking up to these issues and taking them very seriously. Donna, as the county chair, has that message trickled down to your level?
Oh, actually, it started with us.
That's right.
Yeah, because John Brakey was here, and because there were other people going, you know, this does not make sense. And listening to the returns in Ohio, where there were so many people saying, you know, we polled, and it looked like 60-40 until the day of the election, and all of a sudden it's flipped and switched.
And don't forget the exit polls.
Exactly. So we've thanks to John Brakey, we've had some action here. The Pima County Democratic Party did not get involved until probably a little over a year ago, and we took this to the state party. We pushed through a resolution. We actually have gotten support at the state level. We're going to be getting funding to really hire some staff to monitor and educate. It's all been done on a volunteer basis up to now. Howard Dean, the DNC chair, was in Tucson at the end of June, and that was my question to him. What is your understanding of election integrity? And he said, we have a huge problem. He acknowledged it, and mm-hmm. So I think it's a matter of making sure that the rest of the organization is in line with his understanding. He would be happy if we didn't have any electronic voting machines.
Mm-hmm. John, your comment?
Well, I would say this, is that the Republican Party has been kidnapped from the bottom up, in the Democratic Party, DLC, not the DNC, has been kidnapped from the top down.
Mm-hmm.
And being grassroots and building what we're doing is pretty very important. And we passed a resolution, like Don was talking about, last February. We're hoping in Chicago and maybe before, we are going to have a merger of all the conspiracy factualists, not theorists, factualists, and the DNC.
Mm-hmm.
And we are going to work hard as we can to document how the theft will happen.
Well, John, I really appreciate your activism from the bottom up. I agree with your characterization about the way the DLC has an unhealthy hold on too much of the Democratic Party. And I also believe that they're the kind of people who think that if they don't rock the boat, that maybe the vagaries of elections will come around and just favor them. But as you said earlier, this is not about trying to game the system for advantage by one party or the other. We've got to have confidence in our elections or nobody's going to show up. And we've already seen a decline in turnout in critical states across the country. And while we can't lay all of it at the feet of Diebold and these funky electronic voting machines, I think it's a very significant factor. Joining us now is John Gideon. He guest blogs or ghost blogs for Brad at bradblog.com, and he is also found at votersunite.org. John, thanks for joining us today. I understand you had a comment about this development in Tucson, Arizona. Oh, I have the wrong one up. Go ahead, John.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for having me back on. It's really, really great news, I think, that what has come about with this, especially the 100% audit. There's a couple things that I foresee happening. First of all, these are the disability access machines, supposedly. In actuality, the Diebold TSX, the machines in question, do not meet the Help America Vote Act standards for accessibility, and that's been the basis for some of the lawsuits that are presently have been filed and are being filed across the country. I've actually got a HAVA complaint, which is going before an administrative law judge in a couple weeks here in the state of Washington, that claims the same thing, that these machines are not accessible.
And John, give us briefly what the key points are that HAVA requires for a voting machine to be disabled accessible.
Well, it has to have some type of audio. It has to have a means for a blind voter to be able to vote on it.
Mm-hmm.
It has to have means for a sight-impaired voter to vote on it. So it has to have the ability for the voter to change the font size and contrast and the color for voters who are
visually challenged.
Visually challenged with color blindness and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
It also requires that there be technology for other voters, and that's what all the vendors have forgotten. They have hit on the blind and visually challenged, but they've forgotten everything else. So we've got people, amputees and people with arthritis and mobility issues and so forth, that are suddenly going to be left out in the cold and not be allowed to vote because the machines aren't accessible to them.
Mm-hmm.
That's the concern with the Diebold TSX. Some of the machines, Hart InterCivic, for instance, they've done what they need to do to try to accommodate a wider range of people with disabilities. And then there's the voting systems that were made especially for accessibility, the AutoMark, and then voting devices or assistive devices such as VotePad.
VotePad, I've heard of that, yeah. And Donna Branch Gilby, were these issues aired out before the Pima County Board of Supervisors made their decision?
Yes, we did talk some about that. There was an individual from the community of people with the disability of blindness who was appealing to keep these machines, to use them. But the difficulty is that the verification of the vote is done audio, and there's no guarantee that what's actually printed on the receipt on the ballot is what is heard on the audio.
Mm-hmm.
So that split, and in fact, the computer expert for Pima County Board of Elections said that's still a challenge. There's not a direct link, being able to guarantee that what gets printed on the ballot is in fact what the blind individual hears in their headphones.
And John Brakey, I just have time for a quick comment from you before my next break. Go ahead, sir.
Well, I'd say this, is that if you're a quadriplegic, you can't use the machine at all. You don't have no stiff and puff on it.
Mm-hmm.
And we brought a couple of people who are quadriplegic in to test the machines when they have them. And in fact, we brought in more people who are disabled than they did, and there was no disabled people there at all from their side.
Wow.
Interesting enough.
Yeah.
They claim there's so many.
John, I want to thank you. It's a pleasure to talk with you. I appreciate your activism, and stay in touch with us as we head toward the November election. Look forward to talking with you again. Donna Branch Gilby, thanks for getting it and taking it to the Democratic Party leaders.
And Peter, come to Chicago. It's going to be big what we're going to do there.
When is that?
18th, yes. The 18th of August.
18th of August.
Yes, big conversation.
We have to get other activists there. To make change, you got to sit at the table. You can't do it at the end of a computer.
Understood. I think Brad is going to be there. I will not be able to be in Chicago in the middle of August, but I appreciate the invitation. I still have a bunch of parking tickets that I haven't paid in Chicago.
I used to live there.
Me too. Thank you, John. Thank you, Donna.
I was back with Abby Hoffman a long time ago.
John Gideon, stay with us. We'll continue with you in the next segment. 47 minutes past the hour. This is the Peter B. Collins Show.
You're listening to the new KRXA 540. Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
Hi, I'm Scott Dick, host of the Tasty Planet radio show. Every Saturday from 1 to 3 p.m., I explore the world of food, wine, and travel across the U.S. and around the world. I interview nationally known writers, winemakers, chefs, restaurateurs, brewers, and others that make our world so delicious. Join me and my guests every Saturday from 1 to 3 p.m. for tasty news shows, or visit the Tasty Planet on the web by going to www.tastyplanet.org. Listen in and have a good appetite.
Children's books, educational toys, and games your entire family will enjoy are always in season at locally owned and operated Thinker Toys. Hi, this is Nurse Rona of Childhood Matters. We know that our children learn by playing, and the caring staff at Thinker Toys will help you choose the ideal gift for toddlers through teens. Stop by our beautiful Carmel store at 7th and San Carlos, and the just renovated Thinker Toys at Del Monte Center in Monterey. Thinker Toys is open daily.
Good afternoon.
afternoon. I'm Larry Olson with traffic on KRXA 540. Carmel Highway 1 at Valley Way. It's a stalled car blocking some lanes. Marina Reservation Road at West Blanca Road. Solo car went off the roadway and landed on a ditch. Traffic a little slow on 17 southbound as you leave Camden and Campbell up towards the Lexington Reservoir in the Santa Cruz Mountains. So a little bit of slowing there. Slowing on 101 as well as you make your way from the 85 interchange down through Morgan Hill. A little better as you make your way through Gilroy and eventually into Salinas. You don't need different pain relievers for different pains. Wherever you hurt, Advil works. Advil, the every pain reliever. I'm Larry Olson with traffic on KRXA 540.
At the Peter B. Collins Show, and we're number one according to Diebold TSX touchscreen machines. 9 minutes before the hour. As you know, Brad Friedman claims to be on vacation, but if you read bradblog.com, you can see that he cannot disconnect completely. And he's got John Gideon and Winter Patriot and a few other people trying to cover for him. And John Gideon, what is it like when Brad Friedman says he's going on vacation and then can't let go?
Well, it doesn't change all that much, except that we set up articles to go up at a certain time, and he decides he needs to throw something in, so he goes in and rustles everything up, and the plans that Winter and I have kind of all go to pot.
Uh-huh.
I just talked to Brad just about an hour and a half ago. He's up in St. Paul, Minnesota, and he's only been there for a couple hours and already speaking with an accent. So,
oh yeah. Can you tell us a little more? We were up against the break, so I didn't get all the details.
Sure.
This conference in Chicago, August 18th.
I honestly don't know much about it.
Okay. Well, then we'll find out together, and we'll just monitor Brad Blog until we arrive at the correct information.
There we go.
So tell us a little bit. Your post has been up about 45 minutes now on today's daily voting news. Give us a couple of headlines there, John.
Yeah, well, what I'd really like to do is kind of tie in the information from Arizona,
mm-hmm,
with something that happened yesterday, actually, in California, and it'll hopefully be of interest to your listeners through the whole spectrum.
But, go right ahead.
As I said before the break, the voting machines in Pima County that are in question are the Diebold TSX. They only bought them for those machines for disability access. My guess is that because the county has to do 100% audit of those ballots, that the county will probably do everything they possibly can to keep everybody except disabled voters from using those machines,
mm-hmm,
cut down on their work.
Yeah.
And they'll have everybody else go and use the optical scan.
Mm-hmm.
And that will then cause the county to step back and say, we spent $2 million for disabled accessible voting machines. That's what they spent. And nobody's using them, or very few people are using them. Because the fact is, the majority of disabled folks would just as soon vote from home. It's just easier on them to do that, and they don't want to go to the polls. And we hear that all the time from the disabilities community, that they just soon vote from home.
Mm-hmm.
There are some out there who are screaming about it, and they want to go to the polls, and they want their access, and they should have equal access and everything else. That should happen.
Well, and this is, I think, a contributor to the trend. It's not the entire driver, but the trend is that more and more people all across the country are using absentee or vote-by-mail ballots. And some of those, I believe, are people who are skeptical of the process when they go to the polls.
Yep. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah.
So what is happening is that I suspect that that eventually the state's going to step in and tell the county you can't do 100% audit. We're going to change that so that we're going to dictate to you how much what an audit is going to be, or there won't be any audit at all, or something like that. And then go the other way and force the county to have as many people as possible vote on the TSXs, or they'll just end up getting rid of them, or the disabilities community will step in, as they have in California, and they'll file a lawsuit against the county. Mm-hmm. And yesterday it was announced that five counties in California, Alameda, Marin, Sonoma, Yolo, and San Francisco counties, mm-hmm. I think that's five, have been sued by the Paralyzed Veterans of America, American Association of People with Disabilities, and a California disabilities group, and they brought suit against those counties for amongst other things, using Diebold TSX machines with VVPAT printers. It's their claim that they are disenfranchised, or they are not allowed to verify their vote on the printer, the VVPAT printer, because actually, as was stated before the break, the audio feed comes from the monitor and not from the printer. So they don't have an equal right to verify their vote, so therefore they say that printer can't be used.
So the audio actually comes from the CPU of the mini computer in the voting machine.
Yep.
And the argument is that if I hear the audio say, would you like to vote for McCain or Kyle, I'm just saying this, and I say McCain, it can record that, but then I'm unable to read the paper trail to affirm that it's the same as the audio vote that I just cast.
That's a fact, and when you go to verify the vote, it's going to read back to you exactly from the CPU how you voted and not from the VVPAT printer.
Uh-huh.
So...
So then the disabled person is unable to verify the vote he or she just has cast.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. What are the rules about bringing in a poll worker to do this verification? If I'm a disabled person, can I bring somebody in and say I voted for candidate X? Is that what's on the paper trail?
Yes. Yeah. You can do that if you want to. But the whole reason for the Help America Vote Act was to make it so that the voter with disabilities doesn't have to do that.
Mm-hmm.
They can go in and vote completely the same as everybody else.
Yeah.
Now, the AAPD and one other group has already sued counties in the state of California for the same thing, and they lost the lawsuit. This time they've added in the AutoMark machine, which is a completely accessible voting machine. It was made specifically to meet all the ADA requirements and the HAVA requirements for accessibility, mm-hmm. and they're saying that, and they've added that into the lawsuit, saying that it's not accessible because it requires the voter to carry the ballot to the ballot box and insert it into the ballot box, and a voter
gotcha.
May not...
John Gideon, I'm sorry, John, we're out of time for the show today. Thanks a lot for your contribution, and people can read all about it at bradblog.com. I'm Peter B. Talk to you Monday.
Hello, this is Al Moore with More Imported Cars in Monterey, where we feature quality pre-owned motor cars. It has been said that the world's best automobiles are manufactured within sight of the Alps. They include Mercedes-Benz, BMWs, and Porsches. These are the marks of dreams, and they're the manufacturers we specialize in. Some of our European autos start as low as $21,000 and experience very little depreciation. In fact, many of our Porsches actually increase in value, and our Porsches and other German autos have surprisingly good gas mileage too. Many of our autos are covered under manufacturer's warranty or are available with short or long-term service agreements. We also can arrange financing, and we do accept trades.
Drop by More Imported Cars, 999 Del Monte Avenue in Monterey, or browse to moreimports.com. That's MOHR imports.com. Call Al Moore at 831-373-3131.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News. I'm Harvey Carnes. Lebanon is being taken apart in those areas where Hezbollah is concentrated. Not that Hezbollah is crippled yet. Far from it.
I'm Robert Berger in Jerusalem. Despite a 24-day Israeli assault, Hezbollah launched its deepest rocket strike into Israel yet. Two rockets landed in the city of Hadera, about 50 miles from the Lebanese border. There were no casualties. Hezbollah is promising more surprises, namely a rocket attack on Tel Aviv.
Four Israelis died today in the rocket attacks and in Iraq. Shiites hit the streets by the thousands, supporters of Muqtada al-Sadr, demonstrating their support for Hezbollah and stomping on U.S. flags as a show of disrespect. Two suspects in the serial shooter case in Phoenix have been arrested.
It's really scary to think that, like, if they were, like, living here, you know, that could have been any one of us.
Six people have been killed in random sniper shootings during the past year plus, and 17 people have been injured. Police Chief Jack Harris.
After intense investigative follow-up to information received from the public, members of the task force arrested Dale S. Hauser and Samuel John Dietman for numerous counts of murder and aggravated assault.
El Paso, Texas, usually hot and dry, has a couple of feet of water and mud in much of the city now, and there is still light rain falling. Fortunately, the dam across the river in Mexico is holding.
The water had been significantly reduced, and drainage culverts have been constructed to divert the overflow.
Spokeswoman Julie Baldwin says the water level's down nearly 20 feet behind that old dam. The Balco steroids chemist who created what was called the Clear might not have been caught but for the track coach who dropped a dime and mailed a syringe of the stuff to the feds.
Patrick Arnold, a Midwest chemist connected to the Bay Area Laboratory Cooperative steroid scandal, has been sentenced to 3 months in jail for conspiracy to distribute steroids.
I'm very regretful for what I've done, especially what it has precipitated in sports.
The government claims Arnold created the previously undetectable steroid, the Clear, which Balco then provided to elite athletes.
Now more than ever, I'm very much against sports doping.
Margie Schaefer,